Hi, good morning, everyone. Today is January 22nd, and this is the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee meeting. I see my colleagues, Commissioner Samulin, Commissioner Richardson. Good morning, gentlemen. Okay, let's get going. We've got a pretty busy agenda. Is there any request to take things out of order?
Yes, Commissioner. I think Commissioner Richardson asked if we could hear item number 8 first, if possible.
Happy to do that. And then
I understand, Chair, that housing had some stuff that they wanted to prioritize. I just want to make sure we get this item because I've deferred it 3 months in a row because we ran out of time. So as long as we get to it, I'm fine.
We will start with number 8. I just wanted some housekeeping. So item 10 has been withdrawn. Deferral on items 12, 13, and 14.
Correct.
And I had a request from staff to wait until later to take up items 3 and 4. So people waiting for items 3 and 4 will take it up probably towards the end of this meeting. So again, withdrawal of item 10. Deferral item 12, 13, and 14. And we're going to wait towards the end for items 3 and 4. And we'll start with item 8. Anything else? Housekeeping?
That's Anybody? It.
Okay. Commissioner Richardson, would you like to tee up item number 8?
I'm going to defer. I think legal is going to help me with that. And I think Mr. Paz is going to help me if I remember correctly.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the commission. So this item is a proposed amendment to the city's prevailing wages ordinance. So our prevailing wages ordinance provides that for certain city construction contracts, the contractors have to pay their laborers the prevailing wage rates that are published in the U.S. Department of Labor. As defined in the ordinance, the obligation to pay prevailing wages only applies to city construction contracts in excess of $1.5 million to which the city is a party. It does not apply to construction on city-owned land that is where the project is built pursuant to a development agreement, a lease agreement, or a management agreement. Because the city is not a party to the construction contract itself. We're a party with the developer, to the agreement with the developer or with the lessee or operator, and they in turn would enter into the construction contract. So what this proposed ordinance does, and the draft of the ordinance is on page 345 of your packet, it would extend the prevailing wage requirement to construction on city-owned land in excess of $1.5 million, where it's constructed pursuant to a development agreement, ground lease, or a management agreement in excess of 10 years. One item of note is our prevailing wages ordinance currently has exemptions. Certain city projects, and last year, I believe the commission amended this ordinance to clarify the exemptions for certain geo bond projects that don't have to meet the prevailing wage requirements. And so what the sponsor has proposed is because development agreements and leases, we negotiate the public benefit packages on a case-by-case basis, you know, based on each deal is different. The sponsors proposed the ability for the commission to waive the prevailing wage requirements on a case-by-case basis on a 5/7 vote. But the baseline would be that otherwise that the prevailing wages would apply in the same manner as they would apply to other city projects. And in addition, the sponsor is proposing exempting workforce and affordable housing projects altogether from their requirement. As we understand from, you know, these projects, the margins are thinner. And so, the costs could very well make, you know, make or break a project for a workforce housing or affordable housing. And then the only other item is that it would apply prospectively. This ordinance has been deferred a couple of times. So we had a February 21 proposed start date, but we can push that back to June or July, as this would require two readings at the City Commission.
Thank you. And if I could just add something, Mr. Chair, if that's okay.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. And thank you, Raphael, for that good summary. So this came to my attention when we had the marina project in front of us, and I realized that we did not have this provision. Somehow it was left out in the prior, and so and I didn't want to try to foist it on the developer or the project at that time, given that it wasn't part of our ordinances. So that's how I first became aware of this. So. That's it.
Okay. Let me see. Any hands up? No hands up. Someone in the audience. I see Raul's hand up. Raul, are you here? Yes, no? Hand disappeared. Is Raul joining us, our city manager? Or is that someone filling in for him?
No, okay. it would be him. We can move him over.
No, it disappeared. Okay, great. Okay, so colleagues, what do you want to do with this?
Well, it would be my desire to move it back to the commission, the full commission, with a favorable recommendation. So, and I'll move my item.
And I'll second it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, I like to pick up Commissioner Richardson. Thank you for bringing this up. I'm in support as well. So we'll move this item.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair, for moving this to the front of the line today. I appreciate that.
Of course. How do you guys feel about doing item number 9? I think this is an interesting one. Discussion regarding reallocating the Art Deco weekend sponsorship already budgeted to be used towards the museum master plan, sponsored by Commissioner Gongora and Mayor Gelber. John Woodruff, do you want to talk about this one?
Yeah, I can take this one along with Adrian Morales. So Daniel Seraldo approached the city and asked if the $100,000 sponsorship that's currently budgeted for Art Deco weekend, since that event is going to be virtual or was virtual this year, if we could reallocate that and put it towards some master plan improvements, a project that he has there at the facility. And so Adrian and I evaluated that request. And we felt that the project itself made a lot of sense. It would help elevate the space, make it more competitive. And since that is our facility, we do have a vested interest in that. And so when we talked to him, we realized that the project cost, which is still to be determined, but probably in the $350,000 to $400,000 range, that this $100,000, you know, really wouldn't accomplish a lot. So what we talked about was, hey, we do need some savings in this year's budget as well. So we tried to come up with a compromise there where we would potentially provide $50,000 towards the most important enhancements there that he wants to try to get done in that facility. We would save $50,000 at this time, which we do need given our reduction in resort taxes, and that we would work with him and for the FY22 capital budget to try to split that cost if they can fundraise the difference. And so if you exclude the initial $50,000, assuming that the budget is $400,000, we should know the true budget in the next couple of months. That $350,000, we would split it potentially 50%, so it would be a 50% match essentially from the city once they're able to demonstrate their 50%. So that's the proposal on the table.
Can I ask a question?
Yep, and I see Daniel Seraldo's hand up. Okay, yeah, please, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. So, John, just tell us the recommendation that you're making, the $50,000. Is that for a specific project that can be separated from the other work so that if for whatever reason, if we decide in the future to take that the additional work and spread it over 3 years because of budget constraints. Will there be any work left undone related to this $50,000, or will that $50,000 allocation that we do now, based on your recommendation, if we do it, will that complete a project or a series of projects, or will they be left open looking for more money next year?
I believe there's one or two elements of the master plan project that would cover, but I think Daniel would be able to speak to it best if maybe we could have him answer directly.
John, I can help as well. So Commissioner, we've been working with Miami Design Preservation League and Daniel Seraldo on since their new contract, on deliverables and trying to improve the physical space to enhance the welcome center and the experience for our guests as part of this whole, reimagining of Ocean Drive. And that, so he's been working for many years on this museum and some of the elements, that they feel would bring that, elevate that program. So that's consistent with, new millwork, better lighting, paint job, and just overall, flow of how people walk in. So Daniel can touch on that, but we feel like if we, and they have a Todd Tragash, who worked on the project, on their behalf, that's designing most of the stuff, for them. And, we're consistently working with them on trying to improve it. So the idea is, spread it out over different elements and multi-phase until we achieve the full master plan that they have. So this specific number will get us part of this project, but it won't leave an open end, until such time that we get other funding to be able to continue this project.
So whatever if we were to spend $50,000, we could complete the work related to the $50,000. We wouldn't have open drywall or something like that waiting correct. For the other money. Okay.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Thank you, sir.
Okay. I see Daniel Seraldo's hand up. Daniel, do you want to chime in?
Yes. Thank you very much, Daniel Seraldo, on behalf of Miami Design Preservation League. And thank you for the heads up. I was actually on the mayor's panel and I jumped over here. But so I may have missed part of the beginning of the discussion, but essentially, in summary, we have this master plan that we have the architectural millwork drawings. We have the master plan. I think it's in your attachment. And that has been something that we've been wanting to move forward on for quite a while. But we saw this opportunity, unfortunately, with COVID and things being slower, as a time for us to really focus on this. And I wanted to thank the co-sponsors, Commissioner Gangora, Mayor Gelber, and Commissioner Areola, for helping us move this forward. Our commitment is the 50-50 match. Once we have a thumbs up from the city, we're then going to be going to our other funding partners to try to get the match. And those include Miami-Dade County and the state of Florida, as well as we want to reach out to local foundations and do our own fundraising campaign. So our commitment is to raise half of it. And we think that this is going to really elevate the center as a cultural center. And we think that that's the direction the commission has been encouraging. Just to give you one idea of what we've been programming for this year, we're going to actually have the Florida Grand Opera doing a few solo performances within the space in the next couple of months. So we'll keep you posted on that. But the goal of the master plan is improving the infrastructure, things like lighting, paint, but also millwork, cabinetry, and allowing us to elevate the exhibit space so that we could have more of those events. To answer Commissioner Richardson's question, one of the processes we're working on now with Todd Tragash, our architect, is phasing the project and having that phased approach. And so, yes, our goal would be that we have digestible components, because the last thing we would want would be to leave anything open. And so with your support, we look forward to moving this forward. Thank you so much.
Mr. Chairman. I'll mute myself. Hi, Raul.
Hi. I'm sorry, I can't find my raise hand button.
But okay.
I just wanted to clarify our recommendation, which is We're fine with the $50,000. It was originally a $100,000 request. I would recommend that we don't release the balance of our $175,000 contribution until MDPL has demonstrated to us that they have raised the funds for the match. So we're going to hold. So right now it's $50,000. And then once they demonstrate to us that they have, through fundraising or other efforts, raised the 50% match for the $350,000, then we will release our $175,000. And this is all to go towards their museum in the Art Deco Welcome Center.
Okay. Colleagues, you have your hands up. Commissioner Samuel, and I'll call on you first, and then Commissioner Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm supportive of this item and accepting the recommendation as described by our city manager. MDPL and this center is a real asset to the community. They play a critical role in our new vision for the Art Deco Cultural District. I especially like the matching grant here that we're putting in some, they're putting in some, it all comes together. And we're saving $50,000 from the actual budget allocation. It was $100,000. Now we're putting forward $50,000. So I'm fully supportive of this direction.
Commissioner Richardson.
Thank you, Chair. So it's unclear to me, is the $50,000 that we are reviewing right now, is that also going to be matched, or is this 50, it's just the additional funds? Can somebody clarify that?
Yeah, it's just the additional funds, the up to $175,000 for the balance of the project.
Okay. And are we making a recommendation on that, or are we going to wait until the next budget cycle to get that in the budget? John, what are you asking for both today, or just the $50,000?
That's the policy decision, really. I think either is a decent option. I think if you ask Daniel, he would like that earmark today. In other words, that commitment to go ahead and do that. I'm confident that amount of money, you know, we would more than likely be able to use our recurring capital funds, like quality of life funds in South Beach, for example. So it's really more of a policy call of the timing.
Okay, thank you. Well, based on the recommendation of the administration, then we'll move the item. I wasn't sure, Commissioner Samuel, if you were moving it or just if you're going to support it, but I'll move the item, the $50,000, and I also include the recommendation of the administration on the $175,000, and that we put that in the budget next year, but we don't release the funds until MDPL has raise their $175,000, as City Manager Aguila mentioned. So that's what I'll move.
I'll second it.
Okay. I support it as well. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Had a request for items number one and two. Is Maria Rees going to take this up for us? Who's going to do these? Item number one is a discussion regarding Miami Beach Community Development Corporation and its financial condition. Commissioner Richardson, your hand is up.
That's a leftover, but I will tee it up by saying this is an item that I inherited from another commissioner last year when I joined the commission. And we've deferred this 3 or 4 months, so we don't need to do this every month, but periodically, like once a quarter, I'd just like to have an update. So that's why it's on today. If we could get Maria or somebody to give us an update, that'd be great.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. Maria Ruiz.
Hi, Maria.
Thank you for giving me some time. MBCDC, as you know, is an agency that we have been monitoring now since 2013. Because of the issues that we had noted regarding compliance with HUD rules. Obviously, their audit report continues to show the same issues are still in place that dated back actually to 2010. I think that there's been progress made, and we, in all fairness, we need to acknowledge the progress that's been made by the team that's there. our big concern is that HUD requires all tenants to be certified annually and that the rents charged must be no greater than what HUD has authorized for our region. And that problem persists. Those are not challenging things to address, and yet for some reason they've been recurring problems for several years. That being said, we've had conversations with the county. The county has also expressed concern regarding the fiscal position of the agency. I think that we'll continue to work with them to the best of our ability as we have, and hope that the management team can certainly address the Jefferson and Shelbourne properties specifically, because currently there's major projects that have displaced tenants at both those properties, which means those affordable units are not online. So our hope is that the agency can reposition itself financially, continue its growth in trying to stabilize its portfolio and be able to go forward. But we must continue to monitor the fact that their revenues are down. These units have been offline for a while now, will continue to be offline while repairs are made, and that this will in fact have a financial impact on the agency over time unless they strengthen their financial position.
Mute myself. Commissioner Samuel, your hand is up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that, Maria. I'm familiar with the issues that have been raised. I have three questions. First, on the HUD certifications, sounds like that's something we should be doing, that this organization who's trying to improve should be doing. What is the status of that, and what is their response in terms of why that hasn't been done?
That task is actually relatively simple. What you're doing is reviewing the income and household data for each person before you issue a lease. It's a relatively simple process. You're collecting their income certifications and so on. Their explanation has been that there have been some staff changes. They've obviously switched over to Royal American last year. We were told last year before this committee that that would not be a finding going forward. So we still haven't quite perfected that. I would imagine that they're still trying to get their bearings straight with regards to stabilizing their portfolio. But the task itself is not difficult. If we can get the basic compliance piece done, that would be take away much of the concern that ourselves and the county have expressed.
Maria, do we have anyone from MBCDC today to address? Because I know I'm asking you, but are they here to talk about this?
I had been told that they were going to be coming to the meeting last month, and I unfortunately haven't had a chance to speak to them this month, but they were aware that the item was going to be brought up. So I don't know if I don't see any names on the screen at this point.
Okay. All right.
So I don't know if they're
doing sorry. I'm sorry. I see. Sorry, folks. I see Ahmad Martin and Christian Arango. Are they with the entity? Do we know? All right, Ahmad Martin?
Yes, they are.
Oh, great.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
So,
I'm sorry, I said Ahmad. Ahmed, would you like to speak?
Yes, please.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, could I just redirect that last question to Ahmed regarding the certification for HUD? Could you please comment, Ahmed, on what is the status of that, any barriers, and when that's going to be in place?
And before, Ahmed, before you go, I just want to recognize Commissioner Richardson. You also had your hand up. Do you want to wait to hear, or do you have something to add?
I will. I will wait. I'll wait. Thank you, sir. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks. Ahmed, the floor is yours if you want to clarify a couple of the questions that just came up.
Great. So if you could be more specific in terms of HUD certification, we have four buildings that are monitored and regulated by HUD. The rest of the buildings are not. So if you could be more specific in your question in terms of HUD certification.
I'll clarify, and Maria, feel free to weigh in. For the four that are working with HUD, are we in complete compliance with their regulations as Maria described in terms of certification of the tenants and the rent?
Correct. Okay. So we have four buildings, one of which is the Shelbourne, as Maria stated, that is offline. For the other three buildings, the compliance issues come up as a result of I would say it's not as simple as certifying the tenants. The tenants do have to bring in a certain amount of information. That information is dependent on the sources of income, Social Security office, forms of employment. So oftentimes there are delays between they're able to get that information into the office and when on paper that unit should be certified by that date. In a perfect world, we do have a tickler system in which we are contacting tenants in rolling cycles 90 days prior to their lease renewals. However, for the factors I just stated, sometimes all of that paperwork doesn't get to the office. COVID has also impacted the ability for our tenants to get to the office to sign paperwork, et cetera.
Okay. That sounds like an important priority. In the interest of time, I want to cover a couple other things, but as we receive these updates, that sounds like something we really should be on top of. So whatever we can do to, you know, lock that in and make sure we're in full compliance. I appreciate the COVID point, but that sounds something very important that we should hear about as we talk on this issue. Second issue, Jefferson and Shelbourne being offline. Could you please comment on the status, the plan, and when they'll be back online?
Correct. Okay. So for the Jefferson has 5 units on the first floor, which are not online due to first floor, subfloor repairs that need to be made. The work will begin next week again, and probably take about 30 days to complete. Some of the tenants have decided not to return to the portfolio. One tenant who remained is now on the second floor of that building, but in about 30 days to 45 days, as a contingency, that the first floor unit should be able to be reoccupied. The Shelbourne is a very complicated building because it is financed with something called an 811 PRAC. The 811 PRAC does not allow new debt to be placed. It does not allow subsidy to finance new debt being placed on the property. So it makes it very hard to work with conventional lenders and equity partners in order to redevelop the property. Those tenants have been relocated with the help of a HUD relocation specialist since March. The tenants are paying the exact same amount of rent that they were when they were in the Shelbourne as they are now. We, as a result of this financing tool, which is very hard to work with, we are seeking co-development partners in order to provide a path to redevelop this building. In terms of when it will be done, we don't know. We have interviews this Thursday, Friday, and Monday with three potential co-development partners, one of which is McCormick Barron Salazar, one of which is Dante's Partners, and one of which is OLDC. That is part of a larger portfolio-wide transaction that is going to be necessary in order to stabilize the financial condition of the organization. So in terms of a concrete timeline for the renovation and reoccupancy of the Shelbourne, I cannot say with certainty that today.
Okay. So there were 2 properties. I think what I heard was one is 30 days, 45 days at the outside. So probably next time we talk about that, that should be done. And then I understand you're not today ready to give a hard timeline. I think obviously that's something we would like to know sooner rather than later. Last question for me. Maria, the group's improving is what you said. We clearly know some of the folks involved. They're good people trying to do the right thing. But this is an issue where we keep hearing about these concerns. And my question is, from a risk management standpoint, what, if anything, do we need to do to make sure bad things don't happen? So we hope for the best, and maybe this will all work out, but is there anything you think we should be doing? Is there any recommendation from the administration of action to be taken now to mitigate downside?
The answer is actually close monitoring in conjunction with the county and hopefully with other funders, because at the end of the day, those of us who have investments in these properties and who are financially at risk should they fail, we're the ones who obviously have a lot to cover. I believe that open communication and transparency is probably the best thing, because that gives comfort to us. Being responsive when we ask questions. We still are in the middle of fielding a lot of complaints from tenants, and that takes not only a lot of staff time, we're looking at the problem from a different perspective, and we don't always have the privilege of seeing the resolution in the way that might give us comfort as to process. So transparency is probably the biggest thing that can happen. Transparency with regards to construction, with regards to the certification of the tenants, and of the financials, quite frankly, of their collection of rents and their payment of operational expenses. That would be, to us, I think, a significant piece, because if we see something coming, perhaps we can step in and provide guidance. Because at the end of the day, we want them to succeed. Obviously, we've got money invested in these properties. And the best way to do that is to ensure that they're being given clear direction, that their actions are straightforward and transparent, and that it's viable, and that ultimately the decisions they make are in the best interest of the agency and of the properties themselves.
Thank you for that. That's very helpful. So I, the next time we discuss this, I do look forward to continuing to hear about what you're saying as it relates to transparency, working with them, the update on the two properties, and the HUD certification process. That would be my request for the next time we hear this item. That's all for me, Mr. Chair.
Great questioning, Commissioner Samulin. And now it's Commissioner Richardson's turn.
Thank you. And thank you, Commissioner Samulin. A lot of the questions that I had, so thank you. Maria, on the items, the paperwork, if you will, I don't really understand this issue, because if we're pinging people every like 90 days, I realize we've got COVID and everything else, but we all have to get our driver's license renewed. We get our car registration renewed all during COVID. And so I don't understand why a tenant can't get paperwork together if they've been reminded for 90 days. Do we know how many apartment units we're talking about where we don't have compliance with regard to the paperwork?
I don't have that information, because in the audit themselves, all they do is take samplings. So I don't know the pervasiveness of the issue across their portfolio. I can tell you that obviously we have 89 units that we manage, and it's key to us to have a relationship with the clients that, number one, this is coming. These are the documents you need. Here's your timetable. If you don't submit that, you run the risk of not having your lease renewed. We're not encountering the same issues. We are getting all of the documentation, including the Social Security letters of certification, on a timely basis. So I think the key is that relationship between staff and tenants, that there is a greater camaraderie and transparency in communication, because I don't see that translating to our properties.
Thank you. And on the Jefferson, I think, you know, I went out in January, February, which has been almost a year ago, and reviewed these properties and did site inspections. I think that if memory serves me, the Jefferson, I actually walked that property and the subfloor was a problem a year ago. Is that, am I confused? So is it been open that long? So that begs the question, it was really almost a year ago that I was told that the flooring, the subflooring, was going to be fixed. So if the timeline to get the repair is today, we're being told 30 days, what happened the last year? And maybe Ahmed or somebody can speak to that. Because I remember seeing that, and they were moving forward getting that repaired.
And before Ahmed jumps in, Commissioner Richardson, thank you for jogging our memory. I remember that. I think we designated you to go walk the property, because we were all sort of, you know, trying to figure out which version of the presentations was the most accurate. And you volunteered graciously to go walk those properties, and you did. So thank you for reminding us of that. So does Ahmed want to chime in here? Or I see Christian Arango's hand up.
Hi, Christian. This is Ahmed. No, this is Ahmed. I'm talking from Christian's Corner, having some connectivity issues. It's in these discussions, I really hope that everybody appreciates it's very hard to look at this from a 30,000 square foot view. The organization is not a luxury market rental portfolio. It is an affordable housing rental portfolio. And there are very low margins with which to make large capital improvements, in this case, the amount of $70,000. Now, the reason why it took so long is because usually organizations have a larger margin with which they're able to make these capital improvements all at once. We're not able to do that. So we had to go out and find financing in order to do that. Usually organizations aren't making large capital improvements from operating funds. So that's essentially what took so long. We found we had to find a lender to loan us the funds in order to make such a large repair all at once.
In all fairness, I just want to put on the record that we've raised the issues of the condition of these buildings dating back to 2013 and have consistently through prior administrations, actually three prior executive directors prior to Ahmed coming on board, of these same issues, including the Jefferson. So
it's great that you bring that up, because between 1988 and 2013, the organization received an average of $1.1 million from the city of Miami Beach in the form of CDBG, CHOTO, as well as home funds. Now, in 2013, I understand why those funds were taken away, but that is the reason why the organization was in a better financial condition and why they did have the money to make these large capital improvements. I hope moving forward, we'll be able to reestablish some type of support from the city as it relates to reinstating CHOTO status, as it relates to receiving home funds. The Jefferson is one of the properties that we did apply for the most recent home funding, and we were denied this past February. So the organization has reached out to the city through the various vehicles to receive funds to repair these properties.
Okay,
let me
jump back in here. So I'm at state. So what concerns me is I hear you have a cash flow issue that you couldn't make the repair, but if five apartments have been offline for a year, let's assume they are $1,000 a month rental. That's $5,000 a month times 12. That's $60,000 that we've lost that could have been used.
Correct. They haven't been offline for a year. They've been offline since June.
Okay, so 7 months, 8 months. It's still it's also
chicken or the egg. We can't have people in unsafe conditions.
I understand that, but what I think we're identifying is a bigger issue here that we need to deal with, because there are repairs that need to be made, and basically you're saying you have no cash flow to do that. So
yes, which is why we're seeking co-development partners and engaging in a 4% low-income housing tax credit bond deal that provides the portfolio with the equity necessary to make repairs across the entire portfolio.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that we could spend a lot more time on this. So here's what I would like to do, colleagues. Number one, on the items that we need paperwork on. Next, at our next month meeting, I would like a report from the agency to identify every unit that is not in compliance. That'll give you 30 days to get that to us. And then number two, I'm going to set up a meeting with you all separately so I can dive deeper into this cash flow issue, because there's something bigger at play and I don't want to let months go by before we deal with this. And so, and if my colleagues want to have a separate discussion, they can do that as well. But, within the next couple of weeks, I'll be looking for a meeting so that we can talk about this much more. And then we're also going to have a conversation about the Shelbourne, which is a bigger issue in terms of financing and as that property sits vacant. How many units are in the Shelbourne?
24 units.
24. So that's potentially, if memory serves me, when I did the walkthrough, units were renting for between $800 and $1,000, occasionally a little more if it's a two-bedroom. So 24 units, we're losing $24,000 a month rent for every month that goes by.
That is not actually, okay. we have a pass-through lease. So the tenants are still receiving subsidy where their units are relocated. So we're still receiving the same amount of subsidy as if they were occupied. The financial constraint.
Okay, I understand, but if a unit is occupied, only one family can live in a unit. So if our tenant is not in that unit, a different person would be. You wouldn't have double rents on the same unit. So, correct. You know, it's just basic math. So, all right, I get it. So, so by next month, we want a report. I would like a report. Is that okay, colleagues, if we get that report on a status of every unit that has not complied? You can identify the address and the unit number. You don't have to identify the name and tell us every unit that has not complied. I want a report on that. And then I'll be reaching out to get a deeper dive on the Jefferson and the Shelbourne. So, and Chair, I don't have anything else on this item. Maria, I'd like you to come back again next month. You're going to get the report too, so that we can all stay in the loop on this. Okay.
Maria, wasn't there just a MOR for the home project for our properties that we're still waiting for the reports for?
Which reports are those? Sorry?
I believe there was a file inspection that occurred in the past couple of months for several of the buildings, Pennsylvania, Jefferson, Allen.
We did have a file inspection that is
tied. Do you have that report?
But we do not have your financials.
No, we're just looking for the tenant file inspection. I don't know if we've received that.
I, as far as I can see, we sent a letter out that all your items were taken care of, and the only outstanding item was the issue of your elevator inspection certificates. And that letter just went out today that they inspected and found it to be in compliance.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Our city manager wants to chime in here. Thank you, Raul, for jumping in.
I just wanted to add something to what Commissioner Richardson said and what Maria is saying. The basic question is, And you know, without any offense or without any disrespect to MBCDC, we need more transparency and we need to see their ongoing fiscal reports to know how much money they actually have to see if they can keep operating.
You guys have
and those have not been provided to our satisfaction. So if we can get that, if Christian can commit to getting that, then I think Maria can provide a much more comprehensive report without having the same discussion before the committee every month.
Hello, am I on?
Mr. Mayor, may I suggest something, Mr. Chair?
Hey guys, we're starting to talk over each other. Ahmed, just hang tight for a second. Alina wants to say something.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and Mr. Manager. And I wanted to suggest the county has a significant concern and continues to express a significant concern regarding the agency. You can see in the background in the memo that even in a letter as recently as December 2020, the director of housing for the county expressed concern and made reference to an audit that continues on the part of the county. I would recommend and perhaps suggest that we invite him to participate as well. I think it's important as the parent entity that is overseeing multiple grants and multiple relationships with this agency that we understand where the county stands with this agency. And I think, you know, one of my very first meetings here in March last year was regarding this exact same situation. And what I'm hearing today is almost exactly the same as what I heard a year ago.
Okay. Commissioner Richardson, your hand is still up. Did you want to say something?
I'm good. Thank you. But Alina, I think that's a great suggestion, and we should reach out to them and invite them for February, if that's okay with the chair.
Yeah, it's fine. So we're going to bring this back to finance in February.
I would just want to say, in terms of transparency, before COVID, we had weekly meetings with the City of Miami Beach Housing Office. We were asked to supply the audit, which we did. So I'm not so sure about the transparency issue.
Okay, let's conclude this item then.
Thank you.
Okay, Maria, you're still on with us. I think we have item number two is also within your purview. Am I correct in that? Status review of the general fund reserve allocations to support rent, mortgage, and utility assistance programs for qualified city residents due to the economic crisis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, just this week we have actually expended the $330,000 of the general fund dollars that were allocated to provide rent assistance during the pandemic. To put in perspective how much assistance we've actually dispersed to households, we have now dispersed $1.5 million in the past 6 months to help people with rent assistance. And that's the largest amount of rent disbursements that we could find in the city's history. And we did it in probably the shortest period of time that the city's ever had. So that's a very impressive amount. 1.2 million of that 1.5 actually came from county, state, and federal funds. As you know, in the last commission meeting, we had fought with the state to try to pursue additional monies, and we were able to pick up an extra $95,000 that other cities were not able to expend in a timely manner. So we were able to scringe a little bit and get a little more. We are expecting of $250,000 from CDBG CV3 to be loaded. It has not loaded as of yesterday. So we're waiting for HUD to give us those funds so that we can continue with rent assistance. We do have people in the pipeline. I'm hoping that once we gauge the next 30 days and how those monies are spent, we'll have a better understanding if there's greater need. In the backdrop to this, please be aware that under the Biden administration, there are several discussions taking place about a new relief package that is inclusive of rent and mortgage assistance. So we don't have the specifics on how that would impact us. But if the last round has any indication, it could potentially mean about $500,000 more for us. So that's the backdrop. As of today, we've expended everything with the exception of our annual EFSP allocation, which is just about it's less than $20,000, which is limited to 1 month per person per household. So we are currently using those funds and then now waiting for the newest HUD funds to be loaded.
Thank you for the update, Maria. I see Commissioner Richardson's hand up.
Thank you, Chair. So Maria, the $20,000 that is available now, that is there any cap on that, by the way? I know that's for 1 month, but is there a dollar cap on that? I can't hear you.
No, it is tied to 1 month. 1 month.
Okay, so it doesn't matter if it's $800 or $1,500. It's 1 month, right? Okay, and then what? Go ahead. I missed you.
You still have to be income eligible, which is up to, I believe, 120% AMI for these monies.
Okay, and then you said there's additional money. You think that may be available. I'm not talking about if we do another package through Congress, but is the additional money you're talking about, where's that coming from potentially?
So we currently are waiting for the CDBG CV3 monies that you approved in November. Those haven't been given to the city as of yet. There is also a grant opportunity for us to pursue money with the state. It'll be coming to you now in February. We're going to be asking for the full amount that we're allowed to ask for, which is just over $300,000. So you'll be seeing that coming in your February agenda package.
And how much is the program that you mentioned before, the about $300,000? How much would that be if we get it?
It would be, I think, $318,000, which is the maximum we're allowed to request because it's based on our annual formula allocations.
Right.
So that would then be added to the $250,000 that we are expecting from the CV3 monies.
So $250,000. So we've got $20,000, then you're expecting $250,000, and then we're hoping to get $318,000. Am I missing anything? And then if the federal government does another stimulus, that would be a fourth source of funding, right?
In hopes, yes.
Do I have that right? In hopes, if it happens. Now, let me ask you a different question, and that is, do we know from, because we've been doing assistance programs for, what, I don't know, 6-7 months now, do we know how many repeat beneficiaries we have? So what I'm curious about is whether or not 1 or 2 or 3 months of rental assistance is helping someone to get back on their feet, or is it the same people that are coming back that are going to need help for 6 months or a year? So do we know how many, do we know, like, if John Doe has received help 3 different times, that sort of thing?
I believe 5-7% of all of our recipients actually applied more than once. In November, when we received the CRF monies, the state had allowed us to go up to 6 months of assistance at a time. Subsequent to that, the federal government extended its the period for its funds to 6 months as well. So in November and December, we were serving the majority of the households with more than 2 months rent. As it stands right now, the requests that I'm aware of are 1 or 2 months. We're not seeing, except with one other person who's a mortgage applicant, we're not seeing too much more than a couple of months behind at this point.
Okay, so the number of people that are getting 5 and 6 months of assistance is relatively small. Is that right?
Relatively speaking, correct.
Okay, good. All right. Thank you for very much. I don't have anything else here.
Okay, we'll conclude this matter. Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you. Thanks, Maria. Okay, I think you can go, Maria. Thank you. How about we take up item number 7, because I think that's going to take a little bit of time. You guys up for it? This is a discussion regarding the vacation of the 21st Street right-of-way along the front of the Spiegel Hospital property. Okay. Who's going to tee this one up? I sponsored it, but I think this is we've got some experts who did the evaluation. John Woodruff, you want to tee this up? Is this yours?
No, this isn't. I believe it's Roy Coley and the city attorney's office, I believe.
Yeah, I think, Rafael, if you want, you can key it up.
Sure. So, Mr. Chair, this is the proposed vacation of a portion of the 21st Street right-of-way abutting the Seagull Hotel property. And I think when we last presented this item, at the Finance Committee, the appraisals were underway. The applicant had obtained its own appraisal of the right-of-way and valued the appraisal at $5 million. The city has completed its own appraisal, and Roy Coley could address that as well. And the city's appraisal came in at $7.4 million. And so we're here today for direction on whether you would like to proceed, and also to follow up from the last meeting. I indicated to you that we were analyzing the relevant provisions of the charter and the requirements, and we're prepared now. If you'll indulge me, I'd like to walk through that analysis. Our conclusion, just like with prior transactions that were very similar, is that under the city charter, this transaction would require approval by a majority of the planning board and the heightened requirement at the city commission of a 6/7 approval of the members of the city commission. We've looked at the different charter provisions, and if you'll indulge me, I'd like to walk through each one of them very quickly, one by one. There's 4 or 5 that we've analyzed, so that you and the public could understand our analysis, if that's okay, Mr. Chair. So first, under section 1.03B1 of the city charter, the sale or lease of city-owned park, recreation, or waterfront property is subject to voter referendum approval. So this proposed application for the portion of 21st Street that is involved here does not trigger this requirement because the street is not a park. It is not recreation property. And it is also not waterfront property. There is a waterfront parcel east of 21st Street that is directly waterfront, and therefore, for these reasons, under Section 1.03b1, a referendum is not required. Under Section 1.03b2, the sale or lease of 10 years or more of certain designated areas in the city, of certain lots, the West lots, the Lincoln Road parking lots, the 72nd Street parking lot, and the area known as the cultural campus, and referred to as the cultural campus with defined boundaries in the charter provision itself, would require voter referendum approval. This 21st Street property, this right-of-way, rather, is not part of the cultural campus. It is outside of and south of the boundaries of the cultural campus under 1.03b2. And for that reason, a referendum is not required under that section. We've also looked at 1.03d of the charter, which provides that the conveyance of certain public beach right-of-ways that extend from Collins Avenue to the erosion control line would require voter referendum approval. This is not that. This street does not extend, does not reach to the erosion control line. And so for that reason, 1.03D is not implicated. 1.03E of the city charter, the conveyance of certain public street ends would require a referendum. This is not that. This is not a street end. 21st Street merges onto and continues onto Miami Beach Drive. It's very similar to the Ocean Terrace transaction that you approved in 2019, where 74th and 75th Street merged onto and continued onto Ocean Terrace. The street, it doesn't dead end. It's not a street that is surrounded by property with no connection to any other street. And so based on this, we don't believe that this is a street end that requires a referendum under 1.03E of the city charter. And then finally, we know that in 1.03C of the city charter, an increase in zoned FAR generally requires referendum approval. However, Section 1.03C, that same provision, provides that it expressly does not apply to the aggregation of development rights on unified abutting parcels. And that's what would be happening here. The developer would take the unified abutting parcels and pursuant to 118.5 of the city code, via a covenant in lieu of unity of title or a unity of title, would aggregate its development rights and create a unified development site as permitted by the code, as permitted by the charter. So for that reason, Mr. Chair and commissioners, we believe the very heightened requirement in Section 1.03b4 of the charter applies, and it's 4/7 Planning Board and 6/7 Commission. And, you know, as you know, these vacations, when they come up, it's a legislative act within the commission's discretion. If you feel and you decide that the public benefits are compelling enough. In this case, in addition to the monetary value and consideration to the city, the applicant would, of course, simultaneously convey a perpetual easement to the city for the continued operation of the street for pedestrian and vehicular traffic, so that in no way whatsoever would we diminish the rights of the public to access and use the right-of-way in question. So if you have any questions, happy to follow up as well.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to recognize what an excellent city attorney we have.
I second that.
Raul?
Yes, I don't have much to add to what Rafael said, obviously, and I'm not going to get into the legal aspects of it because he did a fine job of that. But basically, this is a request by the owner of the Seagull Hotel, BHI Limited Miami Corporation, in concurrence with their renovation of the Seagull Hotel, in order to accommodate a new hotel operator, the Bulgari Hotel chain. which is an internationally renowned 5-star hotel chain throughout Europe. And I believe they have a hotel in New York, and this will be their South Beach, flagship hotel. They have requested a vacation of the southern half of the 21st Street right-of-way along the front of the Seagull property. And of course, the reason for the vacation, which if approved, would give them ownership of that portion of the right-of-way, is to create a unified development site, therefore permitting them to aggregate the additional floor area from that street end into the project. I do want to note that regardless of that, the project is still subject to historic preservation review. There are two public benefits that they have proffered as a condition of the proposed vacation, which, as Raphael said, would require a 6/7 vote of the city commission, as well as a 4/7 vote of the planning condition. First of all, in vacating the right-of-way, obviously the right-of-way would become part of the developer's property and they would assume ownership of it. However, as Raphael mentioned, they have agreed to grant the city a perpetual non-revocable easement in favor of the city for the city's continued use of the right-of-way. So in this case, roadway access and circulation would not be affected. As an additional public benefit, and perhaps more importantly, you know that our code requires us to do, we use the same procedures that we have under Chapter 82 for leases and sales of city property, and we apply them to vacations as well, meaning that in this case, the city is required to obtain an appraisal of the fair market value of the property to be vacated. In this case, two appraisals were obtained, one by the developer, which came in at $5 million, and our appraisal, which was completed on January 18th, 2021, which appraises the market value of the street end as is at $7.4 million. Prior to that, the applicant had proffered that the appraised value of the street end would not only be proffered as a public benefit, but as a monetary cash contribution to the city. Therefore, we would receive the money and the city commission would determine how it wished to apply that to which project or to what source, et cetera. That would be completely within the city commission's discretion. At this point, what we're recommending, should the committee agree with us, is that our recommendation obviously is to accept the public benefits that have been proffered, with the exception that we would recommend that the city commission move forward recommending our appraised value of the street end at $7.4 million. Mm-hmm. Versus their appraised value at $5 million. Should the committee, after its review of this item, recommend that it move forward, then our next step would be to take it to the city commission for first reading, and where of course it will require 6/7 vote. And then secondly, in between the commission, to take it to the planning board so that they can review it and vote on it as required by the charter as well. And then finally, it would make its way for second and final reading to the city commission. So we're hoping to get this out of finance today with your recommendation accepting ours, that you recommend the proposed vacation contingent on the two public benefits being proffered, the perpetual easement for continued use of the right-of-way, even though we won't own it, and the monetary contribution in the appraised value of $7.4 million.
Great job, Raul. My colleagues, Commissioner Samuel and Richardson, have their hands up. I don't know who's up with who had it first, so I'll call on Commissioner Samuel.
I think he did. Yeah. So go ahead.
It was close, but thank you for that, colleagues. And thank you to our city attorney and city manager. I feel like we're getting two for one here with our legal expertise at the table. I am supportive of the direction and the recommendation of the administration. Just a few top line comments. I think this is a really promising project. I think that we're seeing, you know, the best of the best want to be in Miami Beach. And I think we should all feel good about that. Our community should feel good about that, because it helps us enhance the community and provide better services. Second, as to the vacation comment, you know, I think our city attorney did a fine job at explaining it. We need to rely on our city attorney. He looks like he has done his homework. I think the important things that I would share is, one, there's no operational change. No one's going to really know the difference. We're still going to have the property. So it's important, but it doesn't materially change. And also, I would just say, you know, the fact that it needs the majority of the planning board and 6/7 vote of the commission, to me, that's the threshold for compelling. To get six of us to get on board with something, that's got to be in the context of like a no-brainer. And I think this project is going to pass that threshold. I fully support what the city manager said, the appraisal at the $7.4 million. That's very tangible goodness for the community. So I support the recommendation. Let me just add one thing. I don't think it's too early, though, to start thinking, if this project were to proceed, what and how would we use those funds for? And I'd like to make a request that the city administration come back with a menu of options, not saying we got to put it here, but give us a menu, give us a little bit of a process. Maybe it should come back to finance, maybe a little discussion at the commission. And for my view, I think there's important opportunities in Collins Park. Maybe there's something to sort of connect to the Bass and extend through our parking lot into the park. So that's one idea. I'm sure there's other things in Collins Park, but I think there's also the opportunity for some citywide activity. You know, our reserves took a little bit of a hit, so that's something we might think about. And, you know, we do have some proposals and activity at the Byron Carlisle. And no matter what we end up doing, I'm sure we're going to need some funds up there. So I would just highlight that as a potential opportunity. And I would just ask for the city to come back with a menu and a process for what to do with the 7.4. But I'm fully on board. I think this is exciting, and we should move it back to the commission.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Let me ask a couple of questions, and great job, Raphael, summing up the legal analysis. I appreciate that. I think, Raul, you said the vacation request is for the southern half of the road. So the vacation, if I'm looking at two lanes of the road, the vacation is being requested for half of the existing roadway. Do I have that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So
sorry, I didn't take my mute button off. Yes.
Okay, great. And that would be from Collins Avenue to the end of the street where the sand begins, or
it's the portion of the right of way that abuts the applicant's property. By operation of law, when you vacate a street, then the property would revert back to the center line of the property, which is why the ask is for the southern half of the 21st Street, and it would inure to the benefit of the abutting property owner.
Yeah. Okay. Now, somebody a while back mentioned to me, as not part of this proposal, that wouldn't it be wonderful? It's not my idea. if the parking lot that I'm currently using for my food distribution on Saturday could be turned into a park that would extend Collins Park on the east side of Collins Avenue. I'm just trying to think through all of the options. If that were ever to happen next year or in 100 years, would it be possible? Would there be any limitation as a result of this action on turning that parking lot into a park?
Not that I'm aware of, sir.
And that's because it wouldn't, the parking lot is not part of the street. But if the park extended and the streets were closed, so can you put a park on top of a perpetual easement?
Well, I think the design would have to take into consideration the access for not only the seagull but for the W. So right. So you could maybe put a park, you know, since that would become their property. You know, maybe you could put a park, you know, within the area, not in, you know, so as not to disrupt the access points for the two hotels on either side. But that's still
so
a lot
for
of
example,
space for
the,
a park.
Yeah. So, for example, Collins Park, which is on the west side of Collins Avenue,
right,
has a street on both sides, right? So if you then think about extending further east, clearly, if we didn't disturb the road that is on the east side of Collins Avenue and just are talking about the parking lot, then I don't think that we're even talking about the land that would be involved in this particular vacation, right?
I agree that it can be done that way.
And the parking lot is not in any way part of the applicant's proposal. The parking lot itself is within the cultural campus boundaries. So it's not a part of this transaction.
Okay. All right, good. And I don't know that that would ever happen. It's just that it was mentioned to me previously. And so I try to just think about all potential options that may happen next year or in 100 years. So, and in the vacation is related to FAR, so that would give, I guess, additional height possibilities for the existing seagull property, right?
That's right. By creating a unified development site, the FAR that's associated with the vacated parcel could be used within the property itself. And I understand that Land Use Committee very recently heard the proposed LDR amendments that would, you know, travel separately to provide a modest height increase for the rooftop design. And I know Mr. Larkin is here and could maybe address how they would use the additional FAR within the project.
Yeah. That segues into my next question, Raphael, and that is, I didn't watch the land use meeting the other day, but I understand that there was some discussion on this. So was there any recommendation that came out of land use, and were they asked to look at the question of vacation or just the question of land use?
They were asked the question regarding the LDRs. The vacation, obviously, they don't weigh in on it by code. The finance committee does, but the vacation was explained to them. But mostly their recommendation, obviously, was as to the LDRs. And as Raphael said, the LDRs included a height increase, allowing a height increase up to a maximum height of 120 feet. And there was also discussion with regard to, I'm thumbing through my land use agenda, so forgive me, the construction of a rooftop addition in a manner not inconsistent with the surrounding historic district.
Okay. And I know we're going to hear from Mr. Larkin, but Raul, have you? I'm sure that everybody, because it's public information, has seen the appraisal of 7.4. Have you had any discussions with the applicant about that? Because I know your recommendation, you said, was for the 7.4. So
yes.
Have you had conversations? Do they understand that is the value of our appraisal?
They do. They were provided with a copy of the appraisal. And I understand from Mr. Paz that they have no objection to the 7.4, but I'll let Mr. Larkin speak to that.
Okay. Well, Chair, I'd like to hear if it's okay from Mr. Yeah. Larkin, and then I've got some more questions.
Okay. We provided them with the appraisal ahead of the meeting, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. So before we jump into Mr. Larkin, I just want to say, Commissioner Richardson, I like where I think you're going with this, with respect to potentially, you know, seeing that surface parking lot, which to me is never the highest and best use of city land, particularly oceanfront land, and to one day make that a completion of the Collins Park would be an amazing benefit to our community. So thank you for being forward-looking and asking these questions. At some point, if you want to challenge us to make that a city park, you'll have my support. I think it's a great idea.
I appreciate that. I actually have a vision I've been thinking about that would include possibly an elevated park so that you can see the ocean from. Sure. That's something we'll talk about down the road, of course. But thank you, sir.
Yeah, you have my support on that. It's a great idea. Okay, let's turn it over to the public. And I see two capable adversaries are going to go at it. First, Mr. Larkin, and then Mr. Harrison Robbins.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the time. Michael Larkin here, representing the applicant, along with my co-counsel Carter McDowell and Carly Grimm, and my partner Graham Penn. In answer to your question with regard to whether we accept the city's appraisal number, yes. I've been saying that consistently ever since it was made available to us. We do accept that the public benefit amount would be $7.4 million. And I can't tell you all enough how excited our team is to bring what will be the first Bulgari Hotel in the United States to Miami Beach. You know, they're in other world capitals such as Milan, Bali, London, Beijing, Dubai, and Shanghai, but this is their first outpost in the United States, and we should be proud as a city that they have recognized that Miami Beach is rising, and they felt that Miami Beach was the most appropriate location for their first stop. With regard to the floor area, I want to answer that. That came up as well. Once the vacation is granted, there are certain development rights that are unlocked and travel southward to our property. It amounts to 6,700 square feet. And when you multiply that with a floor area ratio of 2.0, it amounts to 13,472 square feet. With regard to where it'll be allocated, what we are faced with right now is that with our proposed unit count, it'll be about 100 units, and 56 of them, however, face south. When I say face south, what I mean is that they face directly into the Satay 11-story parking garage for that 400-foot tall building. And as you can imagine, with the headlights, the car alarms, the tire screeching, is an inhospitable environment for these hotel units. So what we would do, we would take the floor area that would be made available to us from the vacation of the road and place it in an addition for the southern elevation of our property. So those units could be turned and not face the Satay garage, but rather face eastward toward the ocean. I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman, if you want me to go through any other questions. Commissioner Richardson said he had more questions. I could go through the architectural presentation, but I don't want to test your patience. So you let me know how much more you want.
So thank you, Mr. Larkin. Commissioner Richardson, he asked a question. Do you want to go back and forth with Michael? I for one don't need to see the architectural renderings. I've seen them several times, and I'm just cautious about, you know, managing the time of this overall meeting. If either of my colleagues want to see the presentation, then by all means we'll do it. But I think we can skip the presentation, at least for me. Commissioner Richardson, yeah. How do you want to proceed?
Mr. Chair, I agree. I don't need to see the presentation. I've seen it a couple of times, but I am curious about if there the height issue. So that's important to me. So, Mr. Larkin, if you could simply address the height issue and whether or not there are any changes since our last conversation, that's an important issue for me.
Sure. So the LDRs would permit us to have a rooftop addition. And the rooftop addition would be no taller than the very top of the Satay parking garage. So while it would give us an opportunity to increase the height of the building, it would not be in a way that would be inconsistent with our built environment or overshadow our neighbors, because as you might imagine, that would be impossible with a 400 foot tall tower to our south. So does that answer your question, Commissioner Richardson, about the height?
Yeah, and just frame it for me in terms of the opposite side of the park where the W is at. So the maximum height would be lower than the existing W, yes. Is that correct?
Yes, the W I think is about 200 feet tall. They're outside of the architectural district, which precludes, you know, the 200 foot tall maximum. In the architectural district, usually the height is shorter. So the W will be much shorter than W Hotel. That's correct.
Okay. That's all the only question I had, Mr. Chair, for Mr. Larkin.
Okay. Before we move over to Kent, Commissioner Samuel, you have anything?
No, Mr. Chair. My comments still stand. I had heard the item at land use, and so do not need to see the presentation. Look forward to any other comments, but I'm prepared to move forward with the one addition of a menu in process for the monies that we would receive.
Thank you. Okay. Kent, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today? Thank you very much. I look forward to this project that both the Biltmore Vanderbilt Hotel, Dempsey Vanderbilt Hotel to the west, as well as the Satay Welcome New Neighbors and Restoration. We are concerned about some of the development and the actual dimensions. The Dempsey Vanderbilt, which was originally built in 1938, and then the city compelled the developer to replicate the entire building exactly the way it was on its facades, was restored. And a number of the units on its east side actually are able to see the ocean. Unfortunately, the addition that's being placed on this building will be blocking the views of those line of units. Approximately 12 units that are now ocean views will lose those ocean views. So we are engaging in a conversation with the developer and feel that hopefully the developer will work with us on trying to solve this problem. But it seems a bit unfair for the owners of Dempsey Vanderbilt to lose their ocean views just to allow another building to add an addition when they purchased it, knowing that this condition existed. And there's apparently some legislation that's actually allowing this seagull to do that. So we have to talk about that. The other question I have, and this is directed to the appraisal and appraised value. How does the appraiser determine or identify the comparative land sales that they were using? And I'd ask if the appraiser is present to explain how he selected the six particular sales when he actually missed another sale that's immediately adjacent to the property being acquired. Is the appraiser there?
Is Roy there? Roy?
Yes, sir. I'm here. The appraiser is not currently online with us. We could make available the appraisal to anyone that wants to review it. And if you want our appraiser at a subsequent meeting, we can ask them to be here. They were not asked to speak today.
Yeah, well,
the appraisal is in the packet as well. It was released this week with the materials.
I have, and I'm just curious that a major land transaction was not included in the comparative sales on an adjacent property, and the prices of those sales are almost double what was of any of the other properties that are indicated here. So it's sort of unfortunate for the city if it's really trying to pay fair market value for those numbers to be excluded from a comparative appraisal. And I think that really we need to discuss this appraisal. And I think that the city really needs to include all the comparable properties and get the best value for the city. I mean, this is for the interests of the taxpayers. But that's something we can also discuss. And I think that we really do need to dig into this appraisal done by the city and look at all the properties. And so having said that, I'm looking forward to negotiating and working out a fair deal between the Dempsey, Vanderbilt Dempsey, and the Satai, as well as Bulgari. And I've been talking to Mr. McDowell about that proposal. So thank you very much. Good luck. I hope everything this all works out. And I think you probably could get some more money than you're really suggesting, though. I think this is a very good step of selecting the higher appraisal as being the best one. But I'm sure all these commissioners sitting here would certainly want to get more money if I can show that there's a legal basis and sound economic basis for securing more money for the taxpayers. Thank you so much. Thank you for the time to present to you.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'm going to bring it back up to the dais. Colleagues, okay, Commissioner Richardson, your hand is up.
Thank you, Chair. So I just want to circle back on a couple of the comments that my colleague, Commissioner Samuelin, mentioned. And that is the use of the money, because it seems like it's never too early to start talking about that. So, we have used significant amounts of our reserve account to maintain city services. And I think to the credit of the city, we've been able to maintain services, I think, for the most part, at a level where people have not lost any significant services as a result of COVID. So my priority is restoring reserves, and it's very important to me. Also, as Commissioner Samuelin mentioned, there are needs throughout the city for funds. Certainly, we're looking at whether or not there will be some sort of cultural component in the garage there. I was not satisfied with the first offering, if you will, and I know that we're looking at amending that a little bit, at least a little bit. And I know we're talking about the Byron Carlisle, and we're very hopeful that something will happen there. And I'm hopeful that it will happen sooner rather than later. And it, quite frankly, I've been looking at both of those deals and considering how, if needed, we might have to reimagine both of those projects. So I know that there has been some interest in restricting these funds, if this deal were to go through, only to use in Collins Park, and I would not be in support of that for a couple of reasons, and that is, if this deal were to go forward, the funding would be unrestricted and that we could use it for anything that we determine. And there are other funds that may be available that would be restricted that may be available to use in certain areas. So I I want to join Commissioner Samuelin in moving this back to the commission today, so that you know, we can have that conversation there. I will put on the record that restoring funding for our reserve account is a very, very high priority for me. And if it's determined that we're going to move forward, if the body of seven electeds want to move forward with this, and there's no conversation about reserves, then I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to support it, quite frankly. So I hope that when I think Commissioner Samuelin, you asked the administration to come up with some sort of a list or potential items that the money could be used for. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, that's correct. The only clarification I have is whether you want us to present that list at the commission or to the finance committee, if you're moving it to the commission.
Well, I don't know what the timing is, Chair. Maybe you know. Do we have time to bring this back here, or do we need to? What is the timeline? And maybe Mr. Paz, you look like you're ready. You want to say something?
Sure. So if you get it out of committee today for the full commission's consideration, we could have first reading on December 10th of the vacation. It would then go to. February 10th. Planning board then in at the March meeting for the planning board approval of the vacation with then second reading. Oh, and it would be the planning board review of the LDRs as well, so all together at the March meeting. And then the second reading of the vacation at the April meeting. So if you did want to bring that portion of that for the use of the funds back to finance, there's certainly time to do that.
I don't know, colleagues, what do you feel like we have time to bring it back here? What would you like to do?
Before I call on Commissioner Samuelin, just so I understand where you're going with this, Commissioner Richardson, I'm clear. I think the three of us are supportive of, at least today, vacating the right of way at some appraised value at 7.4 or north of that. But just so I understand where you're going with this, Commissioner Richardson, you're saying that in order to get your full support for this, you're going to be heavily inclined to seeing that money go into our reserves. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like I think you characterize it that I'm based on the answers to the questions that I have, that it wouldn't interfere with later modifications should they come sooner or later. But I'm generally supportive of moving forward with an amount of 7.4 or greater. But I think that we need to have a conversation about the use of those funds and the restoring the reserve account is incredibly important to me, and that needs to be part of the conversation. And so, we could either have that conversation here. So what I would like to do is, if we're recommending, is maybe have a specific recommendation from the committee to go to the commission with the use of funding, if my colleagues would like to do that.
So, and Mark, I'll call you in a sec. I, for one, you know, have seen enough. I love the project. It's going to be a great enhancement for the neighborhood. If we've done a good appraisal and it's coming in at 7.4, like I'm prepared to move this out of committee to go to the full commission. I have not thought through of the use of funds. And I do share your concern prioritization of restoring our reserve account, but I'm not in a position today to say what we would use this money for. I'd be favorably inclined towards that position, but I also don't want to just tie this up in this committee if we're not going to make any further headway today or next month. Let's go to the full commissions the way I would position it, with a note to the full commission, and you're free obviously to express your desire at the next full commission meeting.
And I am not opposed to to that, Chairman, as long as we can either have that conversation here or have it where all of our colleagues can participate in the conversation about the use of funding if this were to move forward. So I don't know if Commissioner Samuelin has any strong feelings about it, but I can have the conversation in either location.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Mark, do you want to help us out?
Yeah, please. So I sort of got us going in this direction, so let me sort of put a point to it. I think we have consensus on the project, and we absolutely should move it to commission. I think that what we should do is request that the administration prepare an initial menu of potential ideas, including reserves. I've thrown out the Byron Carlisle as examples with ballpark numbers that we could think about. And I think we should have that conversation at the commission. If we are able to land at commission, great. Perhaps there will be some additional dialogue. But I don't think we should do that today. I think we move the recommendation and the menu to the full commission would be my preference.
Is that a motion?
It is.
I'll second it.
Okay, great. Okay, perfect. Good job. Rafael, do you have what you need from us?
Yes, sir. And we will also work with Mr. Larkin and their team for additional details, like, you know, how quickly can we close and deposits we'll prepare those terms for you as for your consideration as well.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question then.
Yeah.
The discussion on with regard to our recommendations, the administrative recommendations on possible uses for the money will remain in finance.
Colleagues, how do you feel?
I think that Commissioner Samuelin's motion was that we'll move it all to the,
okay,
the commission and that we would just ask you to come up with a menu. That's the term that Commissioner Samuelin indicated, a menu of, and then all seven of us can talk about it there.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you guys want to add to that menu to make sure it's addressed? I mean, Commissioner Samuelin, you mentioned the Byron Carlisle.
Right.
Commissioner Richard, you were talking about Collins Park itself.
I think the Collins Park initiatives, including
I took the notes here today.
And reserve. So all of those things, I think we would expect those to, at a minimum, to be on the list and the menu.
Okay.
Yeah. And the Collins Park garage with the the retail space and how we fund the build out.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go back to things in order, items 5 and 6. Items 5, I don't know who's going to present this. This is both Commissioner Samuelin and Commissioner Gongora had put this on the agenda, which is to discuss the current status and future plans for the parking department.
I believe Monica Beltran from parking will cover this item.
Hi, Monica. You going to cover this? Commissioner Samuelin, you have your hand up. Do you want to tee this up?
Yeah, if I could just tee it up, Mr. Chair, and then I certainly look forward to hearing Monica. You know, we heard this before. The punchline is that we had to use general fund dollars for the shortfall in parking. We also had some very difficult conversations about personnel. And so when this item was put forward, the goal was to have parking and the administration come forward with a plan so that when we get into our budget cycle, that we do not have to be subsidizing parking and that we do not have to have those type of conversations about our employees. So this is an update. I think we said we'd have a quarterly update, and I look forward to seeing the progress we've made.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Vice Mayor, Commissioners. It's my pleasure today to present the status of our parking department. In the last quarter, the first quarter of this fiscal year, we were able to create a cushion of $2 million generated by, number one, most importantly, exceeding our projection in revenue, And number two, not filling all positions and savings on staffing, controlling staff, but growing as demand increased and as furlough, as curfews changed. Currently, I am pleased to announce that we have no furloughed employees, part-timers. Full-timers were brought back at the beginning of the fiscal year. No furloughed employees. And yet we were able to create that $2 million cushion. Why did we do that? Well, number one, because it made sense, but also because we were projected to generate revenues of 75% starting January. And given the state of the pandemic and the fact that we had a great first week of January or last week of December in the second week, but then now we're back to reality. But so we proceeded with the help, of course, of budget to do our projections. And rather than keeping, for example, the first months at 75%, we lowered those. And even then, we will be able to cover our expenses and still protect that cushion. So how can we do that? To begin with, our staffing levels are approximately 50% of what it used to be. But then again, we have midnight shifts that are very scantily covered because of the curfews, although we still have to do enforcement. We have positions in administrative positions and in other divisions.
Good job, Rafael.
So we feel confident that if we keep that relationship between the revenues and expenses, and now to make sure that we do meet the requirements and the needs for our residents and our visitors. As an example of productivity of our staff, I have to tell you that, for example, compliance in residential permits is at 91%, which is excellent. And you accomplish that by doing good enforcement. So you saw my summary at the end of that memo. We feel we're poised to be successful. The full-time employees represent about half of what we used to have, but they do form the cadre or the skeleton crew for an operation and create the stability necessary so that I can then use part-timers for the peaks and the valleys. And that helps us become very productive. So we have still a hybrid product, but with full-time employees and with part-time employees. And the number of part-time employees will exceed the full-timers because the full-timers are supposed to be the skeleton crew. And the part-timers is that which allows us to grow and shrink. We hope that we expect to keep at least a $2 million cushion for next year. And we hope to carry on that revenue so that we don't have to come back to you or to the city for any more money. We have other adjustments. We've lost, as you know, quite a few on-street parking spaces, which are so highly desirable to the parklets, to bike lanes, etc. So we have adjusted. I expect that where we're at right now is good for now, but we will move along with always the goal of remaining viable and successful. We're well on our way. When it comes to employees, they've gotten many tools. I think we'll become even more productive when they master their new tools. We've worked very closely with the unions, ensuring that while we can't meet every single demand, that every demand that we can or every need that can be met is met. And so that high level of cooperation has just highly contributed to our success. That's about it.
Mark, your hand is up. Would you like to
say a few words? Yes, I would. Monica, thank you for the update. And again, colleagues, this is an update item. I'm encouraged by what I hear. It sounds like we've made progress. I especially appreciate that we're working with all stakeholders, including the union. So I just want to confirm, because again, the goal of this item was that we do not have that $2 million subsidy and that we do not have to be talking about outsourcing or radical changes to our employee group. Just net, net, based on where you're at right now, we're not done yet, but are we on track? It sounds like we are to achieve those goals. Is that accurate?
I'm going to be very bold in saying that we are beyond track.
Fabulous.
$2 million that we were subsidized, we actually have a cushion of $2 million.
Wonderful. That is great news. That's really the goal. Let me just ask one thing, and then I'll turn it over to my colleagues if they have any other thoughts. During these discussions, we've heard some questions and complaints about equipment not working or people aren't able to access what they need. Could you just touch on that a little bit?
Absolutely. Some of our equipment comes from the county, in particular with which we issue citations. Because we're quite complex in our setup, in which people can have permits and different types of permits, and they can pay before from a meter or whatever, the different sources of payment, the county left us for last because it would take an effort beyond what they offered other municipalities. So we went ahead and worked with IT and developed our own in-house system to be able to check for payment of tags. And but the actual issuance of tickets has to come from the county. So all of that was in the process, I must say, when employees mm-hmm. were coming. But it's here. We have our new head. Okay. We have plenty of radio batteries. We have our new body-worn cameras. Our iPads are internal to us. They're working. We are having a few connectivity issues, but that's going to happen when you have new technology. We're working.
Okay. Thank you for that. So, colleagues, that's all I had. It appears the administration is going to bring a status report at the end of the quarter, too. So 90 days out, sounds like we're ahead of schedule and look forward to continuing to hear those updates. That's all for me, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Richardson, your hand's up.
Thank you. Just a quick question. I know that during COVID, we made a decision to shut down the pay stations because it was expensive for us to maintain that and do collections. And I was just wondering if we can comment on how that's working, and also if John has any idea how much money we're able to save by not having to do all of that work related to collecting cash and so forth. If we don't know that, maybe we could talk about that on our next time to visit this issue.
Actually, I do know that. So we had citywide over 770 pay stations. They were quite abundant because they, number one, created a redundancy so that people, if one was down, they would have another option and people wouldn't have to walk so far. Honestly, my personal choice is I like pay stations. They give an option, but it was also costing us $1.7 million a year.
Wow.
To manage those. That was beyond the 1.2 that we needed to keep the full-time employees. So I haven't given up because I still think that there's certain people that feel more comfortable with a pay station. But what we have done in the meanwhile, pay stations are not desirable right now because they don't offer a contactless option, and it would be impossible to have staff cleaning them after you. So for right now, it's a necessary evil. But what we have done is we've worked with Park Mobile, and now we have people have options of paying through Waze, through Google, if they don't want to download the Park Mobile. There is a telephone number that you can call, and they waive for Miami Beach users, they waive usage fees for using the phone. Coming up very soon, we will have a text option. So I think with all those options, in the future, as we realize more money, maybe we can downsize in the number of pay stations when the pandemic is a little slower and we don't worry so much about contactless, that maybe we can go to 200 and something and cut drastically our expenses. Also, take away the option for cash payment and just go credit card. That will also realize the savings. So that's in the works. We haven't quite abandoned that idea, but we're working to improve the product offerings that we currently have.
Okay. Can I follow up, Chair? Yeah. So, Monica, I thank you for the information. So I know that there's some confusion at some of the pay stations because people see them and think they're working and then they're not. So that creates a little bit of confusion. So one of the things that we could, it seems like we have a lot of options, quite frankly. And I'm interested in your idea about using the pay station for credit card only and not cash, because that requires a lot of effort because we have to pay someone to go out and empty the machine, everything. Can the existing machines that we have be modified so that they are credit card only, or would we have to replace them with different machines?
No, the existing ones can be modified. We just need to cover and state that it's only credit card. Additionally, what we have done, Commissioner, because I'm quite aware and sensitive to the fact that some people are confused, we have improved signage, but we have started removing pay stations. Of course, we would store them until a future date, but leaving that which we anticipate we may use in the future, but reducing confusion by removing the excess number that we know we're not going to reactivate, and improving signage. And yes, we can use the same equipment.
I think you're reading my mind, because that was my next question, is whether or not we should start removing the ones that we know that we're not going to use in the future. And then the ones that we are removing, is there a secondary market where we could sell those, or are they just obsolete?
No, we will pursue trying to resell these in the market. Some are newer, some are older, but we will pursue that at a later date when we have clearer expectations, but they're not wasted, on the contrary, and we're storing them safely.
Okay, so, and you think of the 770 that we may wanna get down to about, I think you said around 250, and use credit card only as an option? Did I hear you right?
Correct. And the other thing that I've requested from the vendor, I don't know that they can do it, but would be to give an option at the machine so that the customer could indicate whether they're parked on street or in the lot. And that way I don't have to have a machine for each one of the locations. So they're working on that to see, how we can, again, improve our offerings.
Okay. Is that something that, if I think this is Commissioner Samuel, and this may be your item, is it okay if we ask Monica to do that research and come back maybe next month or in March with that information? I'm interested in two things specifically, is whether or not those machines can be modified so they're credit card only without jamming a piece of cardboard in the no, cash slot. I don't want it to be unattractive. So that's one thing I'm interested in. And number two, it seems to me that if we have a bit of certainty about not wanting to go back to 770 machines, that we should remove the ones that we don't see as critical and try to sell them on the secondary market if we're not going to use them, because the longer that we keep them, the more obsolete they become. And one day, if we're just putting them in storage, they will have no value at a certain point. So, and maybe you can work with your colleagues in the administration to come back and on those two issues and give us a briefing on those things. That's what I would like. If Commissioner Samuel, are you okay with that? It's your item.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I may, I'm absolutely fine with that. I think those are some excellent points, and it fits with the theme of what we're trying to accomplish. So thank you for bringing those in. Yes.
Great.
Okay.
Okay. If it's okay with everybody, we'll see each other again in March.
I'm okay with that.
March okay, guys?
I'm okay.
Works for me. Yep.
Great. Look forward to the update. Thank you. All right, let's move on to item number six. Commissioner Samulin, this is your item, which is discuss our dependency on tourism revenues and how to mitigate. I also share your interest in this topic, as I'm sure yes, Commissioner Richardson does.
Mr. Chair, if I may, thank you for that. And you know, I put this forward, but I actually, my recollection is that, as you just stated, both you and Commissioner Richardson were on board, and I think even offered to co-sponsor. So I think this is the Finance Committee speaking in unison. The top line is we've seen the impact that different events have on our tourism industry. We have a program working with our CFO, John Woodruff, to try and look at alternative ways. At the last discussion, what we talked about was the importance of business recruitment. You know, this move from the 212 to the 305 is alive and well, and we have movements now with our movement to provide good office product, and we're actively having those discussions. So I think what we want to do is hear an update specifically focused on business recruitment. And I believe the intent was to have representatives of the Beacon Council that speak for all of Dade County to see how they can better help us. With that, I'll turn it over to Raquel and the administration.
Good morning. I'm not sure if John wanted to kick this off or not.
I'd just like to say that I've been working with Raquel on this for a couple of weeks, and I have to say I'm pretty personally excited about some of the options that she's going to present here, because as you know, if we want to catch some of those big fish, we have to bait that hook appropriately, and the fish aren't going to jump in the boat by themselves. So this, I think there's some really good information here, and I'm looking forward to it. So Raquel, please.
Thank you so much, John. So good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. For the record, I'm Raquel Williams, Economic Development Director. And at the December 18th FERC meeting, we began a discussion regarding our business attraction strategy, with the committee noting a preference for financial services firms as well as tech firms being targeted for recruitment. Since then, the administration has outlined in more specificity the types of business attraction and expansion Raquel, incentives. Raquel. Yes.
Hey, Raquel, pardon the interruption. I'm not sure that that last part is an accurate statement. If it is, you know, financial and tech firms, I think they're among industries that we could attract. But I don't, at least for me, I don't remember saying that those were the top two.
That is correct, Commissioner Arriola. At the last meeting, I believe you had to step out for a moment, and Commissioner Richardson and Samulin did express interest. I had indicated that healthcare and health and wellness industry businesses would be ideal, and there didn't seem to be a positive response in reference to that sector.
Okay.
So that's what I'm referencing.
We'll talk about it. Thank you for that.
Let me jump in on that, Mr. Chair, if you'll allow me. I think what I recall is that we identified several different things that we wanted to potentially look at. And rather than try to have you come back and talk about all of those issues in one meeting, we agreed that this meeting you would focus on that particular sector, but then in February we would do something else, and in March we would do something else, and so forth. So that's the way I recall it. So I'm expecting that we're going to do this today, and that we'll have other things to talk about in February and March and April and all those things.
Certainly, our business attraction approach will not just be for tech or financial services firms, but we are presenting today a few incentive programs that I think would be ideal for attracting businesses in those industries. We also have leadership from the Beacon Council here with us today, James Comston. Executive Vice President of Economic Development for the Beacon Council is here representing that organization. And so I do have a presentation. It's very brief. It was provided with the supplemental, and we can go through that very quickly. I know our communications team has that prepared. So I do want to ensure that we recognize that this would be an investment. We are proposing an incentive program or programs that would lead to a return on our investment. So this would not be a giveaway, but rather a program that is performance-based. And I want to make sure that we highlight that this is an investment. Next slide. So our business attraction toolkit has not in the recent history of the city included economic development incentives in this form. And I think it's an important piece of the puzzle, especially since we have as much interest as we do have in Miami-Dade County and businesses moving from the Northeast and Silicon Valley to Miami-Dade. There's a lot of attention right now on the city of Miami, and we need to ensure that Miami Beach puts its best foot forward and lets everyone know that we are open for business and we are ready to invest in diversifying our economy. So I highlighted a few of the goals that we would see realized through this business attraction toolkit of adding the incentive programs. So the first incentive program is called the Job Creation Incentive Program. And this is essentially a baseline to compete directly with the city of Miami and their DDA. The DDA has been very aggressive in trying to recruit companies to Miami, and they have put forward an incentive program that a lot of companies have taken notice of and have been benefiting from. So we want to make sure that we are competitive, especially with our closest neighbor. And this program is modeled to be a new and improved version of that program. So there are a couple elements that are a little different than the DDA's program, which would be more advantageous to the businesses that are looking to relocate to the area. So of course, this is performance-based, as I mentioned before, must create at least 10 jobs and be at 125% of the county average wages. The targeted industries are the ones that we identified at the last FERC meeting, and this can be modified at the request of FERC, and you know, we can have further discussions on the other industries that you may want to include, or we can just focus on the ones highlighted here. This would be looking at new-to-market companies and expansion. So companies that are coming from outside of Miami Beach or companies that are already in Miami Beach seeking to expand. With the DDA's program, they're looking at a three-year incentive period for both new-to-market and expansions. For this program, I'm proposing a four-year period for new-to-market companies and keeping it at the 3 years for the expanded companies. Companies receive added bonuses for hiring local residents, local graduates, or moving or expanding in North Beach. One of the things that has become even more prevalent in the discussion is North Beach, as we're going through our process of developing the CRA redevelopment plan. I think that any business incentives and programs that we put forward should enhance anything that's going to happen with our CRA. So if we're promoting economic development and business attraction in the CRA in North Beach, I think anything that we do citywide, if we can give some preference or added bonus for companies moving to North Beach, I think that's ideal. The maximum annual incentive would be $60,000, and that's for an annual basis. So that's for new to market or the expanded companies. And then over the 3 to 4 year period, the maximum would be 180K to 240K. Next slide. Okay, so this, I'm not sure if you can see it very well, but it was in the backup in the memo. We provided a couple scenarios. So if you look at company A, B, or C, we identified some of the areas where you could receive funding, and you can see the type of award that the company could receive on an annual basis. So we're looking at 600 per employee for the first 50 jobs. For the DDA, they're at 500. 400 per employee for each job added, 51 to 100 jobs. And this is $50 higher than what the DDA is offering. I wanted to note that $150 per employee if a City of Miami Beach resident is $25 higher than what the DDA is offering. So essentially, we want to compete with that program because it has been very successful. They are the market leader right now. And I don't think that we should try to create something that is too far away from what the baseline has been and what we've seen to be successful in the region. We just want to match it and then supersede it. The next investment incentive program would be the Capital Investment Incentive Program. Now, this takes it a step further, and it really focuses on those companies that are bringing capital investment to the city. So this will allow us to create a competitive edge and advantage in the local market because there's not a lot of municipalities that are doing this. I know that Miami-Dade County is offering an incentive program that is tied to capital investment, and companies would be able to stack that investment with our incentive program. I'm sorry, both incentive programs would be able to be stacked together. So essentially, we want to leverage what the county is offering to businesses wanting to invest both in real property and tangible property. So they must create at least 10 jobs, so it's still performance-based, and 120% of the county average wages is the requirement for the jobs that are created. So again, we want to pay closer attention to North Beach. So the minimum capital investment for a company would be $500K in North Beach, or it would be $1 million citywide. So a company would receive more points if they would locate in the North Beach area. We want to focus on those same targeted areas as we mentioned before, unless the FERC or commission would like to do something different. And again, this is focused on new to market companies or local expansions. We do want to make sure that we give our local businesses an opportunity to receive an incentive because any expansion that they do really benefits the city because of the tax revenue that is generated by the expansion and the additional jobs that could be generated. So this program would have a 5-year time frame for the incentive, and there are bonus points for businesses with longer term leases or businesses that own the property that they occupy. The higher number of jobs that are created, the more points would be awarded. Same for the average wages and the capital investment. So the minimum annual investment would be $50,000 with a maximum of $250,000 over 5 years. Next slide. So again, we have some scenarios that were presented in the memo, identifying the types of companies that could garner different levels of incentives. So the fiscal impact and return on investment is very important. I want to make sure that it's clear that the City Commission would have the ultimate duty of authorizing any of these incentive applications and agreements that would come subsequent to that. So the commission could determine how many incentives were ideal for any given year. Again, the companies would be issued the incentive based on performance. So a company would not receive any incentive award unless there was proof that the jobs were created at the wages determined, as well as the capital investment. We would be looking at the increase to the assessed value from the year of the application and then looking backward to see what the difference was before and looking at how much assessed value had increased. We also want to make sure that the-
I want to speed this up. Let's conclude this.
Okay, so I think the Beacon Council is here if you would like to have them weigh in on what they've been seeing in the market and the types of incentives that they are aware of or that they have been promoting to companies that are seeking to relocate to South Florida. And these incentive programs.
If they could present quickly the reception they're getting to this. Is your hand? I'm looking for hands.
Yeah.
Is your
hand? Yeah, I was. Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just have a suggestion that if the colleagues, I'm really appreciative that you put this together, Raquel. It's a lot for us to digest this type of program at one time. So, Mr. Chair, what would be more beneficial to me is if we are allowed some time to digest this and think about it and then maybe have it back next month with the Beacon Council where we could maybe ask questions, but it's just a lot of information and I'm not prepared to to ask a lot of questions today because I want to study it, and that'll probably require me making a separate meeting with Raquel. But I mean, if you wanted, we want to do something quick with the Beacon Council, but I think it's I need some time to think through all of this.
Yeah. So yes, I mean, I've got a very firm opinion on all this, and I know, Raquel, you put a lot of work into it. And you know, I want to be efficient, not only today, but going forward, give you some direction so you don't spin your wheels. If we're going to be accommodating to this and like the general direction, then let's provide her that input either today or in a subsequent meeting. And so, you know, if the Beacon Council's here and wants to spend a couple minutes just saying what reception they're seeing from the market this with respect to this kind of program, and if you have any specifics, that would be welcomed. I, for one, don't like any of this. I have 3,000 employees. I'm a businessman. I know what attracts me to markets. None of this does. What attracts me is things like infrastructure, you know, whether it's schools, you know, the general infrastructure, promises from government to cut red tape as I go through my approval process and things like that. Like, I have no interest in getting a couple hundred bucks per employee that I bring to a market. It's sort of peanuts, right? The kind of high-end employer that's going to come to market that we're seeking to attract. I mean, you see the bold-faced names from Silicon Valley and New York that are coming. You know, when they've got companies that are worth hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, to give them 30 grand, it's not going to move the needle, right? They want to know the quality of our schools. Can we speed up the approval process? Do we have good internet? Do we have access to airports and things like that? That's what's going to attract people. You know, do we have enough office space? So, you know, I worry that we just told Raquel to go do this, and that's what we're going to go talk to Peter Thiel about, and he's going to laugh in our face. You know what I mean? You know, we need a consortium of the deans of the engineering department of University of Miami, FIU, to talk about graduate programs and sponsorship opportunities for these companies to, you know, provide scholarships to the best engineering students in the country. I mean, this is the kind of stuff we really should be talking about and not peanuts. Anyway, that's how I feel about it. Someone from the Beacon Council want to tell us how this is going to attract Peter Thiel's next startup?
Sure. If James Comston could be brought over.
And Peter Thiel was the initial investor in Facebook and the founder of PayPal, one of the leading lights of Silicon Valley VC investments, and he just bought a home on the Venetian Islands.
Mr. Chair, if I may add, while we're waiting for James to be brought over, I do want to highlight that Blackstone, who's moving to Miami with 200 jobs, they are benefiting from a similar incentive program offered by the DDA. So the investment may not be as much for high-end, high-wage types of companies, but it's something that helps with making the decision.
If you believe Leon Black decided that the 50 grand or whatever the DDA has given him is why he's here, I will disagree with that.
Okay, I see that James is now on the call.
I'm here.
Or rather, it's Steve Schwartzman. That's Blackstone.
Good afternoon, Chairman and Commissioners. Thank you for inviting us to be part of the discussion today. And Chairman, certainly recognize your comments about the limitations of incentives. No company is relocating only on an incentive deal. Talent is clearly the number one driver for any of these corporate relocations. In Miami, overall, South Florida has made great strides in the last decade, and we believe we're much more competitive in that space. And you see that now with some of the companies that are announcing their relocation. However, part of that discussion we find does include some type of incentive discussion when the county, the state, and in certain cases, a municipality can put money on the table and be part of that discussion. It does tip the balance in certain cases when we're being competitive against other communities. I think what Raquel and the Development Department have drafted in the overall memo, I think is fairly comprehensive and makes some sense. I will say that that competition really isn't another municipality, Miami-Dade County, or another community in South Florida. We are competing against Atlanta, Dallas, DC, and others around the country, and as you know, internationally for business recruitment. And so the ability for us to have a broad tool belt of toolkit of incentives and services is important in those discussions. A lot of activity happening right now, a lot in the paper that you're all aware of, others that are in process, and we look forward to working with the City of Miami Beach and other partners in landing some of those deals. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
Commissioner.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to frame this a little bit, I think we have a couple different topics that are sort of coming together. You know, we as a city have to do whatever we can. And I agree that incentives are not the definitive answer. But as part of an integrated program, especially with what's going on, I would be open to that. So that's point one. But point two, I think, and you know, this is really directed a little bit more towards James, is the county has an entity that wakes up in the morning to recruit businesses, and we're part of that. And so I think my punchline to understand here with just a couple questions, how do we better leverage the relationship? James, could you just say a little bit of a word just for everyone's background, you know, rough size of the Beacon Council, budget, just give us a little of the lay of the land of your organization.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner. Beacon Council is 35 years old. We are the county's economic development agency. To your point, we represent all of Miami-Dade County. We're a public-private partnership funded by business tax receipts collected by Miami-Dade County. That rate makes up roughly 80% of our funding, public private sector investment. Our member investors make up the balance of that. Just over $4 million overall annual budget. We're 23, 24 employees. So yes, we do wake up every day, and our focus is how to help companies grow in Miami and how we can tell our story externally to recruit new business to the area. Miami-Dade County does have an incentive program, targeted job incentive. The state has some programs that are still available at a very high level for those that are making serious capital investments. But there is an opportunity for those municipalities to, you know, come into that discussion on the incentive programs as well.
Thank you for that, James. And, you know, you have a pretty substantial organization. If I understood you right, that's coming from business tax receipt funding. So obviously we're part of that. My sort of sense of it, for whatever reason, I don't think that Miami Beach and the Beacon Council have fully come together for the good of the city. You're doing great work for the county, and I'm not saying that that is on one side or the other, but we are where we are, and the opportunity is to move forward. We have so much going on here with the CRA, our reinvention of Ocean Drive, Washington Avenue. We're a big part of this, and I guess what I'd like to know, how do we best tap into the resources that you all have? And second, given the size and importance of Miami Beach, is it possible that you might have someone in your team dedicated to work with the city and Raquel? We need some help here. The moment is now. And a lot of these people who are coming here want to live in Miami Beach. So it's quite natural that if they'd want to live here, that they might want to work. And I think we'd like to have your help. How do we do that? And is it possible for you to dedicate someone to work with us?
Thank you, Commissioner. First of all, we have a very strong working relationship with Raquel. Since she's come on board, she and I have been speaking weekly about opportunities in the marketplace. She invited myself and our CEO, Michael Finney, to be part of the North Beach CRA charrette, which we participated in, and we look forward to those continual opportunities. As we continue going forward, working with local companies in the city together between Beacon Council and city officials, and helping to help them grow, targeting small businesses that are challenged by COVID and other economic challenges, as well as the recruitment from outside of the marketplace, we look forward to working hand in hand with the city there. I lead the economic development team. We're a team of eight project managers. We are organized around target industries. And so I will commit myself to that and have to the direct engagement with the city. But at this time, I can't commit to you that, that you know, reorganizing our team as such, but certainly we'll take those comments back.
Okay, thank you for this. I have some other thoughts, but let me first hear. I'd like to hear from my colleagues, Commissioner Richardson
So Commissioner Richardson, I'm going to call on you, but just to the point that you made, a lot of information here for us to digest. So I'd like to try to conclude this item since we're not going to make any decisions today. But if you want to provide direction to the staff, then let's do that.
Thank you. I just have a question for James, and that is, are there any other cities in Miami-Dade County that are providing ancillary or adjunct incentives? Or would we be the first to do that? Do you know?
Yeah, thank you. Within Miami-Dade County, there is no precedent of a municipality providing cash incentives, except for what was mentioned by Raquel, that the Downtown Development Authority, which is, as you know, a function of the city, recently has created a program. There are no other communities in Miami-Dade County that currently offer any type of program. However, in Broward, there are two, I believe, Sunrise and one that escapes me, have some type of small program as well.
Okay. So, and thank you. So I too, I agree with some of the comments that Commissioner Samuelin made about the relationship that we have, you know, and I have to say, in the 6 years that I spent in Tallahassee, I don't think I ever heard the words Beacon Council and Miami Beach used in the same sentence or paragraph. So I don't know that the city's ever had a good relationship with the Beacon Council or been the beneficiary. So I would, for one, like to learn how we could work closer so that we could utilize the resources of the Beacon Council. So, and then I just say, you know, Raquel, thank you for spending the time on this. I think it's a really good place for us to start this conversation and figure out how we want to utilize the presentation that you put before us. I think the chair makes some really good comments about infrastructure and other things that incentivize people to come to our community. It's a combination of a lot of things. So, and I would like to spend some time looking at what you put in front of us. I'm of the mind that if we're going to provide incentives, they should be adjunct and ancillary to what the county is doing. And so maybe do something on top of that as opposed to feel like we might be competing with, and I don't think that was your intention at all, but it's just a lot to digest. And so the two things I'd like to move forward with is I want to spend some more time looking at this, but more importantly, I'd like to find a way that we can be better partners with the Beacon Council. And maybe James, you or your staffs could make yourself available. Maybe we could have a meeting in the next 2 or 3 weeks, a call to talk about that. And then we'll be talking about that more as it comes back before this committee. So that's where I'm at, Chair.
Hey, Commissioner Samuelin, still be handed?
Yep, I do. And I'll try. I know we want to bring this to a conclusion. So just so we keep the ball moving forward, First off, there are a number of industries that make sense. I think finance, money management is the low-hanging fruit. These folks are coming here. They're leaving Wall Street. They're moving in. Even on the tech side, you might think of the funding side, the venture capital, as to be like really a no-brainer, not at the exclusion of other industries, but that's a power vertical. And I believe it's one of the verticals for the Beacon Council. James, we're very appreciative of you being here. We want to work together. You're doing some good things and we want to be part of that. And that is clearly an important takeaway from this. I think that I recognize there's a lot in that presentation. I understand my colleagues want to wait a month. I get it. That's fine. But as incentives, as sort of the cherry on the cake, assuming it's not a huge financial hit, I am open to that. And my last bit of advice is I don't think we want to lead with the incentives. As my colleagues have said, it's a holistic package that we're easy to do business with, that we're going to get people through permitting processes quickly, that we all care, and Miami Beach is fully open to business, and oh, by the way, we have an incentive, and we market this at trade shows, in the media. Right now, I see a lot of activity in other parts, and we need to get ahead of this. So colleagues, I completely understand if we're going to take 30 more days, but the moment is now, and we need to strike. So that's my closing thought. Let's get it while the going is good. The fish are out there that John talked about. That's all my thoughts, Mr. Chair.
I 100% support everything you just said, Commissioner Sandlin, and even more so your enthusiasm for this. I feel the exact same way. I'm looking at, our city manager, Raul, and, if you want to give us some thought, I'm happy to work with you. I do think the messaging from at least the city of Miami Beach, and I hope, with our new county mayor, collectively, we can all be more aggressive and on point with our messaging that, we want to attract business, that, everything is on the table. But, more than these, what I think is very token amounts of money, I think it's got to be more comprehensive and more aggressive to communicate to people that are rethinking about, headquarters and where they're going to be spending the next, decade or two of their professional lives, that, South Florida, particularly Dade County, particularly Miami Beach, is very interested in job creation and strengthening and diversifying our local economy. And that message needs to get out. That's part of it's cutting red tape, being bold in our thinking, working with our university systems. I mean, we should be talking to Miami-Dade College, FIU, UM, and the others about, what are they going to do? Are they going to put together a $50 million endowment to attract the country's or internationally's best engineering students so that people, when they're thinking about relocating to South Florida, know that they're going to have a rich pipeline of really talented students? What are we going to do to stand up our public schools, charter schools, et cetera? I mean, this has to be very comprehensive. City of Miami Beach is a small city, and I'm hoping whether it's the Beacon Council or someone from our county mayor's office can really spearhead a group of, folks that can comprehensively and now in 2021 put this message out that all the components of what make a city dynamic or county dynamic are on the table and we're all rowing in the same direction. Because I just think that we're spinning our wheels saying we're going to allocate $50,000 or so in our city budget to attract world-class businesses. A CFO will laugh you out of the room. They're not going to take a meeting if that's what we're going to bring to the table. What we should be bringing is a regional plan so that folks know that if they make the commitment to our community, that it's going to be long-standing and comprehensive. And I think that's what we should be trying to do as a city. That's just my two cents.
Chairman, may I make a closing comment? If I may?
Yeah, James, please. James, please.
No, I just wanted to thank you again for inviting us. Wanted to respond to Commissioner Richardson. We welcome the opportunity to sit down with you and others from the city and talk through these issues. So we'll be following up. And it's all about finding those opportunities like Starwood, that was a partnership between Beacon Council and the county and the city to have them grow in Miami Beach. So we welcome that. And thank you again.
You really think that's why Barry opened his office here?
I'd like to think it was a small piece of the puzzle.
Not the fact that he lives here and loves it here, and there's all kinds of reasons why he's in Miami Beach, but whatever.
Mr. Chair?
Ro, I don't know if there's a delay. Yeah, I said yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch upon some of the comments you made, and I wanted to thank Raquel for her presentation as well. But these are the type of things we need to start thinking about into budget time. And I think there are two things that, in my opinion, will move the dice forward. And I'm really happy to see the enthusiasm from these members of the Finance Committee, because where the Finance Committee goes, sometimes the Commission follows. So number one, there has to be a unified political will to incentivize developments that are intended to bring more Class A commercial real estate, to our beach. And with that, I mean, we initially had a proposal for increased height, but the point of that was to really try and incentivize Class A space in three neighborhoods: Sunset Harbor, Terminal Island, which is not a neighborhood, and parts of Alton Road. And as you know, and I'm sure some of you were frustrated by it, it kept getting bifurcated and delayed to the point where up to now we've only moved forward, I believe, with Terminal Island. So, I think number one, I really think this is something that the entire commission has to get behind, because we are receiving proposals for development. It's just a question of the commission being conveying to the neighborhood that this is responsible development and it's the right thing to do, because we can't always rely on a tourist economy, as the pandemic has shown us. Also, the pandemic, unfortunately, has provided us and the South Florida area with an opportunity. My question is, and maybe this is for Raquel to research, because as we go into, for example, our next agreement with the Bureau, which is typically the GMCBB, which is typically a five-year contract, we know that their strength really is in promoting tourism and booking the convention center. Is there an organization that, whether it's a private organization or not, that could really assist the city of Miami Beach in marketing itself as a Class A commercial destination? And would the committee or the commission consider a reduction of dollars when we revisit the Bureau contract, and maybe a reallocation and focus towards organizations that do this for a living, which I'm sure they're out there. Because if you have headhunters looking for jobs for qualified individuals, I'm sure you have large corporations that have marketing plans that are designed to bring businesses to areas where business is already flowing. So I just wanted to stick that out there as food for thought. Maybe Raquel, you can help with that by identifying some organizations. They may not necessarily be the GMCBB, but this is one of the I think unintended. I don't want to sound crass, but this is one of the unintended benefits that the pandemic has given us in terms of the opportunity to reshape South Florida, including Miami Beach, as another type of economy that does not rely solely on tourism. So I would say that if we want to continue to do that, we need to take perhaps a more aggressive and unified posture in educating our residents that, starting with LDR incentives, and perhaps reach out to an agency that can assist us with marketing. If the universities would like to donate money for that endeavor, then I think that's where those dollars could really be used.
If I may respond through the chair.
Yeah, please.
Thank you, City Manager, for bringing that to the forefront. We have had some discussions about how we can potentially market and advertise, whether it's this incentive program or a broader narrative about Miami Beach being open for business and aggressively wanting to recruit businesses. We do want to participate in the rebranding initiative and have economic development be a strong part of that. But I think between now and that initiative coming to fruition, I do think we need to put out some messaging that is tied to economic development, business attraction, and expansion. So I think your thoughts are in line with what we have been having some discussions about at the department level. And I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Okay.
So just to follow up on that point, Mr. Chair, if I could. Raquel, the city manager made a specific request to do some research to bring some of those firms or options forward. Is that something you feel comfortable that you could do as we continue this dialogue?
Yes, I believe that's something that I could do, and I would also work with our marketing and communications department to help identify the firms that would be appropriate. I wouldn't want to do anything that is counter to what our marketing and communications messaging has been. We want something to enhance it and to focus more on economic development, but we want to work in partnership.
Thank you. All right, Commissioner Samuelin, the final word.
Yep. I know we want to move on, but this is the conversation that just keeps giving. I appreciate the good comments that our city manager made. I would just add a couple things to it. One, I strongly agree some of the movements we're making in office space that is good for the community, not only for the business, but tends to attract lower intensity uses is integral to this effort, and we're right in the middle of it. Second, I am supportive if we need some additional resources in addition to the Beacon Council, that I would absolutely be open to that ask, Raul, that you put on the table. My final thought, while this is a longer term strategic discussion, I also think we need to look for short term quick wins. For example, you know, I think we could do some early messaging around some of the things we already have in place. And I think we could do some quick and dirty, if I may, communications that are open for business. And my last thought that I will add to that, we have people here. We have people who are moving. I've mentioned this idea now a couple times, maybe just getting some of those folks together to give their input and their blessing and their network, some sort of financial advisory council. That looks like a pretty low cost activity, and maybe the private sector could help us out. I'm here to help in any way I can as well. This is a great topic, good for the community in the long term.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, guys.
So, Chair, right. Just before we move on, can we assume that this will be the main topic of next month's conversation, and we'll just push out property management, who's going to talk at some point about the asset inventory study they've been doing with CBRE? Can we move them, push everything out 1 month? Does that sound okay?
Not with me, but colleagues. I mean, I for one didn't care for the presentation today. I'm not going to be excited about it. I think it's peanuts. I think it's more important that we think either about marketing, getting the message out to the world that, you know, we want to work with them to bring their businesses here, and therefore spending the money on marketing or something like that, or coming up with some other solutions that actually mean something, like, you know, a commitment to cutting red tape, expediting approval processes, things like that, or what you were suggesting we defer, John, which is, you know, taking a look at our assets that we control and how we can utilize those to attract businesses. But, you know, sort of stipends for business, it just, as as someone who runs a business, it's just not something that moves the needle for me. I'm not going to be convinced that that's going to make a difference to any meaningful employer. Maybe you get a sandwich shop or something, but you're not going to get big players to pay attention to you with small dollars.
Chair, if I could just ask John, I didn't really understand maybe the question. I don't want to defer property management. I know they've been working on some stuff. We've been waiting to hear from them about assets and so forth. So I would just say, I don't know, we need to move on. I think I appreciate, Raquel, you put this together. It's a lot to digest. It's a good place for us to talk about programs. I think that if we do something like this, from my perspective, it has to be part of a bigger, package, if you will, in cooperation with the Beacon Council and communicating and marketing what we are, what we have here in Miami Beach. So this obviously can't be all that we would do to incentivize somebody, but if it's wants to be a part of it, I'm open to having that conversation. But John, just to circle back, I don't want to defer, unless my colleagues do, the conversation about property management. So is there a reason why we can't do both?
No, we can absolutely do both. It's just a question of how much time the committee wants to take with some of these various initiatives. And so since we've been doing fairly deep dive here in economic development, and it's an important topic, I just wanted to make sure that before you took on two different topics, two topics at the same time, I just wanted to make sure, get that clarity before we left the meeting.
And I'm going to ask you, Raul, and see how you guys feel about this. And maybe we kick this up to the full commission and put it on our agenda, which is, are we better served having this dialogue, say, at the full commission level and provide direction to Raul and his team to maybe, send a resolution up to our county mayor and saying, look, guys, we need a comprehensive, because if we're going alone as a small city to try to do this, we don't have the resources to do this. And maybe we ask for her to impanel a group of, civic leaders to come up with a real plan where we use all of our assets, so we've got, just in this city, we've got a convention center. We've got some great hotels, and we put together all of the things that just the city of Miami Beach is doing with creating new parks and a safer MXE district and repositioning it, and then holistically just say everything that the county is doing over the next several years and put that out as a worldwide message that, Dade County is really going places, and we're not just a sun and fun capital of the world, because that's really what our GMCVB has traditionally been doing, was promoting our tourist industry. But we start talking about a more mature community that really has great universities, amazing infrastructure, great cultural amenities, things that I never had when I was growing up here, but over the last 20 years have really come online. And rather than trying to do this piecemeal as the city of Miami Beach, try to get the full weight of the county to put something together in the next 90 days. I mean, move fast, and we'll do our part to present our package, because we probably have the most attractive part of that package and communication, and rather do it that way rather than doing something just ourselves.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Please.
I think that's a great thought. And what I sort of see this as, I think we want to operate on parallel tracks. So I'm very supportive of what you said, and I do believe that the county efforts, we should be supportive of, and I'm sure the Beacon Council is working that. And maybe what we could do, to put a punchline to it, I think we should hear both items, property management and the next evolution of this discussion. Anything we can do to motivate, encourage the county, that's a great track. fully on board with that. But I also think we need to do our efforts as well. And that the city, with all the ideas that we've kicked around, I think we had some good content today. Perhaps what will help today, maybe the incentives led the charge. And I think what I'm hearing from my colleagues is that's a lower priority, not necessarily none. We can have that conversation, but we need to see the other stuff first, and the incentives maybe come at the end. And I think we need to flip that. So I think we bring back both conversations next month, and I think we'll have a productive one. And Raquel, I'm happy to visit with you and John before the next commission meeting and provide a little more guidance as well.
Yeah. And Raul, you know, I don't know if you have any thoughts, but look, I grew up in this community. And when I was growing up and going away to college, and I had to make up my mind about whether I come back here or go to New York or Chicago or, you know, all the other, you know, major cities, you know, when I did an inventory of the things that would attract me to come home, you know, we did not have all the cultural amenities. And this is just 20 years ago. Obviously, now we have the Arsht and the Perez Art Museum and all these great cultural amenities. Our schools have gotten better. The infrastructure has gotten better. Our, you know, our airport is now a world-class airport. We've got a great seaport. We have a lot more businesses growing up here now. I mean, our law firms have gotten bigger. Our banks have gotten bigger. So all of these things that even 20 years ago didn't exist, exist now, right? So that's part of the reason I think we're starting to see traction that didn't exist when I was young. And then when I went to grad school, nobody from Harvard came to Miami. I mean, it was a true outpost. I mean, you might have one or two a year literally coming. And that was 20 years ago. Now you're getting them by the dozens every year, you know, of all the top cities in the country. But we need to put together a real message out to the business world about what we're trying to accomplish here. And I just worry that as a city, we just have limited resources to do that. And I think we should now challenge the county to do something more aggressive. We're trying to do stuff with Class A office space here in Miami Beach, which I think is the right move. But if we're serious about this, then let's partner with the county and, you know, offer what we have to offer, and then have them package all of the assets of the county and get that out. I mean, and do that in the first half of 2021. I think that's the way to go.
Okay. So would the motion be to explore both options, you know, two options, how we could do it on our own, and also how we could do it in partnership with the county and entities like the Beacon Council?
You know, Raul, I mean, talk to the mayor. I'd like to have this discussion maybe at the full commission. We see, like, you know, what Mayor Suarez is doing, and I think very successfully over the city of Miami. But everyone's trying to do this on their own. I think collectively, if we can get on the same page and get some of the, we have, you know, Fortune 500 CEOs here. You know, they need to weigh in on this, and we got to get our big cultural partners, the CEOs of the PAM and the Arts Center, and, like, you know, put a two dozen of the top CEOs in town from our universities or cultural institutions, our Fortune 500 companies, and put out a branded message about why people should be relocating here. We are competing with Atlanta and Dallas and Austin and Nashville and all these places. And I just think doing it city by city is a right, really tough way to be successful.
Yeah, because what you're saying is really talking about a countywide effort, like a county task force. You know, with,
yeah, and you know, maybe the county mayor's already working on this. I haven't really seen a cohesive plan yet. She's only been in office 2 months, and to the extent that we could help her formulate that, I'm willing to do that. You know, she's got a lot on her plate. Yeah.
We can, you know, look into COVID, that and report back.
I think we should lead, right? I mean, and partner with Francis over at the city of Miami and the Beacon Council and the DDA, and let's really get this thing done.
Okay.
And Chair, if I could just, I agree that there's a lot that can be done at the county level and our partnership with them and the Beacon Council, but I don't want to ignore that there are things that we can do locally as well that are adjunct and ancillary. So I think from my perspective, part of the concern has been that maybe the city has not insisted in the past, has not insisted enough on more partnership with the county and the Beacon Council. So I see opportunity for partnership there, but I also see that there are things that we can do locally that would be adjunct and ancillary. And I don't want to just say, okay, it's a county responsibility. And I don't think you're saying that. I don't want to ignore the things that we can do here that will be adjunct. So, and that's why I want to talk about this again next month after we've had a chance to digest it. Maybe we'll say to Raquel, we like this piece, we don't like that piece. Let's think about something else. And I certainly agree with Commissioner Salmon that this is, we don't want to have our local incentives be the lead in the conversation about why you want to come to Miami Beach. But there's a place, I think, for it in the conversation. It's just not the first bullet point.
Agree.
Mr. Chair, I know we want to move on, but I just want to sort of underline a little bit of what Commissioner Richardson just said as well. While I do support the countywide efforts and we should do that, I think there's some low-hanging fruit. A closer collaboration with the Beacon Council, consistent messaging of how open for business that Miami Beach is, helping our businesses be successful. I think there's some things. So I think we need to operate on those parallel tracks. I look forward to the conversation next.
Okay. All right. Great conversation. And thank you for the Beacon Council being here with us today. All right. Colleagues, items 3 and 4, update on the city's Blue Ways master plan. Betsy doing this one?
I think this is one of the parks team, so I'm not sure who's on from parks. I see Barbie Hernandez is there.
Barbie, are you?
Can you guys hear me? I was muted.
Yeah, now we can.
Good afternoon, everybody. So this is a quick update on the Blue Ways. In February of 2020, we provided you an update on the Blue Ways, and we had discussed a few projects. And what we wanted to discuss here today was to see if any of the committee members would like to look into potential projects, and that we, the Parks and Recreation, along with Environmental and Sustainability, Betsy, would be researching it, going to the HOAs in those areas and seeing if there is an appetite for it and making sure we do our due diligence. So that's basically an open-end conversation and discussion about projects on the Blue Way. So opening it up to you all.
Colleagues, you have any preference?
No preference.
Chair, this is John. Do you think it'd be helpful if Parks maybe set up individual meetings with each of the commissioners just to kind of do this more, maybe, you know, to be able to walk through the materials? They seem pretty long and in depth. That might facilitate this process. Just an idea.
It's fine. Okay, I mean, it's fine with me. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay. I will reach out to each of you guys. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So then the next item is a discussion regarding the mooring field study. And is that you, Betsy?
Yes. I'm here to give an update on the mooring field study. As this committee is aware, we hired eSciences last year to conduct a feasibility study so that we could understand if a mooring field would be feasible and what the permitting requirements would be. At the October Finance Committee meeting, we received direction to expand the boundaries further south down to Fifth Street, as well as to explore potential opportunities with the Miami Beach Marina. Since October, we have initiated conversations with Suntex. Suntex is the management company which owns the lease for the Miami Beach Marina, and they Suntex is a national company that owns, operates, as well as develops marinas throughout the United States. We have talked to them to see if they would be interested in co-locating the mooring field facilities at the Miami Beach Marina. They're interested, and we wanted to receive direction from this committee if this was, if we should continue these conversations. I do want to note that we are going to be applying for the Florida Inland Navigation District funding. There's a grant program that provides 50% match for permitting and design, and we will need to identify an upland facility in order to access those funds. If this committee is okay with us moving forward with that approach, we'll continue conversations. We'll also put forth a resolution to the commission confirming that this approach of the potential boundaries as well as uplands is in conformance with what the city commission would like to see. We'll continue to move forward through permitting. During the permitting process, we'll work to develop a management plan. And at that point, we'll be coming back to the city commission in order to develop an ordinance that will also need to be approved by the mayor and commission.
All right, colleagues. I mean, Betsy, one of your questions is whether we want you to pursue free money. Is that one of your questions?
I think the question more is, should we continue talking to Suntex, and does this committee feel that co-locating the facilities at the marina works? And if so, we will move forward with find money this upcoming spring.
Yeah, I guess what I meant is, you know, some of the questions folks had is, you know, how much is this going to cost? And I think Suntex was pretty confident that a lot of this could be funded from outside sources. What do we need to do to get more comfort on that? Is that part of engage Suntex, continue the dialogue, and then have them start applying for the grants? How does that work?
So our next steps will be to continue to negotiate and to have discussions with Suntex. Because those facilities are already in place, there will definitely be a cost savings because we won't have to build a new facility, because one of the other potential options was to create a full new facility, new bathrooms, new harbor master. So the positives of co-locating at the marina is it will save money on those upland facility costs. As it relates to find funding, they do provide 50% match for planning and design as well as for construction. So we will be putting forth an application for those funds. However, we're not going to be a very qualified applicant if we have not identified an upland facility. So that's why we do feel that it's very important to continue these conversations with Suntex.
Gotcha. And Commissioner Richardson, I see your hand up.
Thank you. Betsy, it seems to me from my days in Tallahassee, I remember we had a lot of conversations about mooring fields and everything, and there was some statewide limitations on mooring fields. And so maybe that's changed, but can we establish a mooring field, or do we have to get permission from the state?
Yes, we will need to go to the state and receive permits as well as authorization to utilize the sovereign submerged lands where the mooring field will be placed. So there will be an extensive approval process with the state of Florida.
And is it normal for these approvals to happen? It seems to me that at one point there were only a handful of mooring fields approved in the entire state, or has this become more routine now, or do you know?
Commissioner, I can answer that. Before, we tried every year. There are a handful of, the state awarded a handful of pilot programs or pilot mooring fields, which Miami was one of them, around Coconut Grove. We lobbied and as part of our legislative priorities, tried to get one established here, which we could not. So what Betsy is going through now, and Betsy, congratulations so far for getting this far, is she's going through the very cumbersome multi-year process of establishing a mooring field with the state outside of this pilot program, which we were never considered for.
And is that pilot program completed now, or is the pilot still continuing? I don't know if we know.
I do know that there are a number of mooring fields that are about to come online in 2021, including Watson Island. And the city of Miami is also working at for a mooring field adjacent to the Marine Stadium. But I'd have to look into the exact specifics as it relates to the pilot. I'm not sure if this was part of the pilot or if the pilot has been expanded.
Okay. I mean, that would, if you could check on that and maybe, I mean, we have Tallahassee lobbyists that could probably help you with that question. So because I remember there were some issues that we had when I was in Tallahassee related to the mooring fields and so forth. And in terms of where you could dock your boat if there's not a mooring field in the area. So the other question I have is whether or not we have thought about if there's, since we're doing the work on this, if there's a need in the community in North Beach for a mooring field, has anyone raised that as a possibility? Is there a need for a mooring field in both areas? Has there been any conversation?
I don't know. This was done specifically. This has been a long time request of the residents of the Sunset Harbor neighborhood. So that's why we did this one first. I've not heard from North Beach as to whether they would want us to initiate the process for one.
Okay.
But this has been ongoing in the Sunset Harbor neighborhood. It's one of their priorities.
I know it's been an issue there. So, okay, thanks so much. I appreciate the help.
Commissioner Samuelin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Betsy, thank you for all your good hard work on this. And I know we've had some evolution, but just for the public's benefit, as well as make sure we're on the same page, could you just broadly define the geography? Where would the mooring sort of start and finish? Because I think that drives a little bit of the location of these upland facilities.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner. At the October Finance Committee, we were given direction to look to expand the boundaries from Sunset Harbor, where Maurice Gibb Park is, all the way south to Fifth Street. And it would also include the south side and pieces of the north side of Belle Isle. However, you know, this is the proposed boundaries right now. We will need to go in front of the state and the Division of State Lands to get authorization for this entire area.
Okay. And the decision with SunTech, I think clearly one factor is the location that we so desire. So could you talk about sort of the pros and cons of using that marina location? Are there other viable locations, or do we sort of think that's the right one?
I think from our initial evaluation, we believe that Suntex and working with the Miami Beach Marina is the ideal location based on the fact that they already have a lot of the upland facilities and that are needed as part of a mooring field on site. They have laundry, they have bathrooms, they have the ability to bring in dinghies and boats. So there's a positive there. The fact that Suntex also has experience working with marinas as well as mooring fields in other parts of the state. So for example, in Sarasota, they also manage the marina and the mooring field, which sits outside of the marina space. So they do have that experience from a management perspective. So I think that is another positive. If we were to look at other locations along that West Avenue, Sunset Harbor neighborhood, there isn't another existing facility. So a facility would have to be created, and that would include dinghy areas, pump out facilities, as well as bathrooms. And it is recommended that laundry and showers be included, but it isn't required per state statute.
Okay. And my final comment would be that let's keep in mind, and I recognize this is going to take us a while, so it's not ever tomorrow, but just keep in mind the workflow around community outreach. There's clearly potentially some neighborhood impacts, and you know, now maybe the South the Fifth Neighborhood Association would like to hear a little bit about it at the right moment. But I just want to sort of highlight that before we get too far down the path that our neighbors aren't and community members aren't blindsided. But to your specific question, you know, if you're saying that's the right location, then to the question of should we continue those conversations, I think I'm open to continuing them because you're saying that's where we sort of want to be. So that those are my thoughts for now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Samuel. And Betsy, so what's the direction that you're asking for from us? Is that what Mark just said?
Yes, I think the direction would be that this committee supports co-locating the mooring field upland facilities at the Miami Beach Marina pending negotiations with Suntex, and we will bring forth a resolution to the City Commission for your approval either in February or March so that we can include that resolution in our grant application.
Okay, great. So Mark, can I just say that was sort of a motion that you made?
Yeah, and Ricky, just before we go, I think that we have at least one person from the public. I see a hand.
Okay. Thank you for calling that to my attention. Did not notice that. Mr. Bruce Backman. Bruce.
Hi, everyone. So that is quite a new development, Betsy, where you're going to locate the marina upland facilities. We will have boats with or without a mooring field. So if we can have regulated boats not dumping sewerage into Biscayne Bay with a mooring field, let's have a mooring field. That makes sense. I was very concerned about building more structures in our park here where we already had a design in place. And Suntex did raise some alarms with me because I know as recently as this past New Year, there were some issues with crime and a lot of noise. But that will be for you people to work out with Sofna. So I'm fine with the mooring field personally here. I'm no longer on the Sunset Harbor board, so I'm just speaking for myself. But anything to save the bay is great. And saving money with an existing facility instead of building new and kind of changing our park design at Morris Gibb would be great. Thanks. That's it.
Yeah, great, Bruce. You took the words out of my mouth. I kind of generally like this because the infrastructure is already there. We don't have to recreate the wheel. I for one, I mean, I sponsor this. I think getting the mooring fields done is really important to us. As Betsy mentioned, and I didn't realize it is 2021, but Watson Island mooring field and then the Miami Marina over in Key Biscayne establishing a mooring field, it's going to start pushing some of that traffic our way because we have unregulated waterways. So the problem that, you know, we're seeing more and more of derelict vessels, party vessels, you know, people parking in the back of homes and staying there for weeks, if not months, going to get exacerbated. So the sooner we get ahead of this, the better. So it's a timely discussion. So Betsy, you have the direction you need. And I see your hand, Commissioner Richardson.
Yeah, I just had a question because I know that we're going to move forward with negotiations with the marinas. So who would pay the cost? Would the city pay the cost and we would recover that by renting the mooring slips, if you will? Or who would pay the cost associated with this additional cost that we would negotiate with the marina?
We haven't gotten to that level of detail yet. There would be fees that we would collect as part of the managed mooring site. The number of mooring balls that would be within that existing area would dictate the amount of revenue that we received. Some of the direction, or I guess not direction, but some of the feedback that we heard during the public outreach was that they wanted to see the cost of these moorings being at a higher level as to attract voters with that may be coming down from Canada and the Northeast, who are generally traveling throughout the Caribbean area. So I think that would be something that we would explore as part of the ordinance, and I believe the management plan would further detail those specifics.
Okay, that sounds good. I just wanted to be clear that the plan is to lease or rent the mooring balls and that would offset some of the. Okay, great. Thank you. Nothing else from.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. I think our final item is number 11. Discuss funding needs for stormwater projects. Is that a Roy item?
It's David Martinez and CIP. And Roy.
Okay. If we can get those guys teed up.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. I just got led into the chat room. Good afternoon, like I said. The administration has been discussing the need for stormwater funding in some of the projects that we have ongoing. So we felt that it was necessary for us to bring to you a recommendation on how to move forward. We have three projects that you're all aware are in some stage of development that are moving forward. Of course, familiar with the West Avenue project, the Indian Creek Phase 2 project, as well as the South of 5th First Street stormwater project. We're gonna be finding ourselves with a need as early as potentially next month. We have a significantly large change order that'll be presented to the commission on both the West Avenue project and the Indian Creek project. When we look at the funding needs that these would require, including the South of 5th project, we're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of about $28 million for different things. So we wanted to have this open discussion so we can plan ahead. The administration's recommendation is to fund that from the current resiliency fund. And I know that John Woodruff can speak on in terms of what's there and where that's going to, how that's going to grow or not.
Yeah, I can just highlight this because let's just step back a second in the big picture. When we talked about funding for stormwater, you may recall that we had $100 million bonds that we did several years ago. We did a second $100 million in bonds. And now this third approximately $100 million that we're using for these kind of projects is coming from that Miami-Dade interlocal agreement / new resiliency fund, as it's known now. And so we have used quite a bit of that money already. At this point, if you include the $11 million that we think we're going to receive next year, the final year that we would receive any funding, we'd be at about $68 million. And so this $28.2 million ask is going to cut significantly into that fund balance. And so, do we have this money available for this purpose? We definitely do. I think the what we just need to be aware of, eyes wide open, is that as we deplete these funds and we want to think about potentially starting any new projects, that we, at that point, we'd probably have to have a rate increase discussion potentially to talk about how we would fund something like that. So that's, so I guess I just wanted to confirm that we do have the money here for these three projects, but also just kind of eyes wide open, heads up that, at some point these funds are going to run out and we just need to be cognizant of that as we contemplate, looking at that Jacobs engineering sequencing, project sequencing, and which projects could go first, and that we may need to have a hard discussion at that point.
Commissioner Samuelin, you have your hand up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple questions. First, for each project, how much is now the total budget? So if this was approved, John/David, what Indian Creek's an incremental 8.15. So what's the total budget for that one?
Give me 1 second, Commissioner.
Sure.
And give me that number. Sorry, I had a lot of paperwork on my desk here. The original project was awarded for just under $14 million. So so this ask will increase that project to well over $20 million. I don't have the exact amount with me. I wasn't prepared with that amount. But it's,
that's okay, Dave.
Yes.
And
West Avenue, do you want me to cover that?
Yeah.
West Avenue would put us in the over $100 million mark when we add this amount to it. Currently, we have an available $9 million in the project budget. The change order would, including soft cost and other fees, would be an additional 24. So the delta would be about $15 million, which is what's represented on the memorandum that you have in front of you.
Yep. So we'd be over 100 on West. That doesn't surprise me. And then First Street, David, what's the total budget going to be for that?
I'm going to have to bring in Roy on that one as he's managing that one. Maybe he can fill in that blank.
Yeah, Commissioner, right now, of course, we're still at concept planning level, and we're estimating in the range of $25 million for that job. But there's still some unknowns in design. And until that's worked out, that's a very concept level budget.
I realize these are large, complicated projects, but boy, these numbers are really adding up. And you know, to now think we're over $100 million on West is somewhat striking. So question, what other options do we have? I see an ask for $28 million. Can we simplify? Can we do something different? What other paths do we have?
And if you're referring to how do we not spend those type of dollars? We would have to first undo some of the direction we have gotten from the city commission on some of these. As it relates to Indian Creek, there's two principal, and we would have gotten into that when we go through the change order at the commission level. But two of the principal items that are requiring this budget change is, one is the relocation of the generator from the creek, Indian Creek itself, to the parking lot that you might remember. The other one is related to the inability to be able to construct the permanent final seawall on Indian Creek that's tied up with the permitting, the federal permits. On West Avenue, there's three elements that create that gap. One of them is, as you know, the relocation of the whole stormwater treatment system components to the parking lot. Two is the upsizing of stormwater collection infrastructure associated with from increasing the level of service stormwater from 5-year to a 10-year storm. And the third being the construction of the additional quality treatment required by DERM. So something would have to give in order not have that need that we're talking about.
And I guess where I'm going, because I understand the resiliency fund has these funds available, but we have other needs. For example, you know, we're working to upgrade our seawalls. I know we have an approach to look at those. I don't think that's completely funded. There are other neighborhoods. And so I'm just struck by how large these projects have become. And, you know, this is a $28 million is quite a sizable ask. So curious how my colleagues feel.
Commissioner Richardson, your hand is up.
Thank you. Just to be clear, I want to make sure I understand. I think you've got this here today seeking a recommendation to send it to the commission. Is that right?
That is correct, Commissioner. What would happen is we would have an individual change order request for any of these, particularly Indian Creek and West Avenue, and it would have an associated capital budget amendment that we would work out as part of the companion item at the time.
Okay. Okay. And then all of the funding that you're asking for is for ongoing projects. Are there any new projects? I don't mean new sub-projects, if you will, but these are all related to ongoing projects. Is that right?
These are ongoing projects. The one that's at a more of a planning stage, as you're well aware, is Roy's project right now with in the South Pit.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you've looked at all alternatives, and you have not been able to identify any ways to reduce this number at this point. Is that right?
That is correct. We're in the final stages of negotiations with the two contractors on the two projects I was talking about to, you know, these should be the upper limits. Obviously, with the negotiation, the idea is to bring them down somewhat, but it would not, it would be just a very small number. I'm sure that we would bring it down.
All right. And if we move this today, it would go to the commission for discussion with all seven of the electeds. Is that right?
Right. We would, this direction would become a, an item accepting your recommendation at the commission level, which we would bring to the February meeting.
Okay. No, I understand it's a lot of money, but these are ongoing projects, and if we don't fund them, they're going to be further delayed, or there'll be an unfavorable result. So I will move the item with the administration's recommendation.
Okay, you made a motion?
I did. I made a motion to move the item based on the administration's recommendation to move it to the commission.
Mark, what's your hesitancy?
No, my hesitancy, Commissioner, Mr. Chair, is just the size of the increases and the total size of the projects. I think it makes sense to get it out of the commission, out of committee, and have the discussion at the full commission. We may not have good alternatives at this point, but it's a pretty substantial ask, $28 million, and now we have projects over $100 million. Mm-hmm. So mine is the fiscal side. That's my concern.
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
That's okay.
We're not going to resolve it. Yeah, we're not going to resolve it here, and I do think it's got to go to the full commission. This is a big item. I'll second your motion, Commissioner Richardson, just to get it out, and obviously we could send along with Commissioner Samuel's concerns and notes.
And I would agree. If this were the last and final stop, we'd be spending a lot more time on spending 28. But it's going to be. We'll send it over, and all seven of us can talk about it there. So, and I think that. The administration will be ready or should be ready to answer any questions about the needs for the increase and so forth and so on. So, but I don't want to delay. I don't want to delay these projects. I want to keep mm-hmm. everything moving. So I appreciate that. And it sounds like the administration, you've got guidance.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay.
Folks, I think that concludes today's meeting. I don't think there's any more items on the agenda. Please fact check that for me.
That's it.
We got it.
All right. Awesome. Great meeting. Got a lot done today. Everyone enjoy the weekend and hopefully the lovely weather.
Wonderful. You too. Thank you, everyone.
See you. Bye.